Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show. In fact, this one's going to be a very special one, I can tell you and assure you, and various other reinforcing adjectives, because my very special guest is the man who, well, at the same time as inspire you and get you off your keister, he also makes you wig out somewhat, and he's really great. Which I suspect is why they called him Dane Wigington. Dane, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinny. Thanks for your courage and your ongoing effort to expose the crimes that are happening in our skies day in, day out.
I call it scumbaggery. Now,
yeah.
Can you, something I wanted to get into, that I know that you have a lot of news to relay regarding the geoengineering issue that is of, extremely pressing validity in our times. But I was just signing off, being able to move into a new home, and the person asked me who I was interviewing, and I recall that you, in fact, have a really fabulous home that was on the front cover of a magazine or something of that nature, and you were very successful working for the corporates and what have you. And I wanted to actually ask you to relay your story of how that all kind of came about and how it happened for you.
Well, any success I've had was not in the corporate world. I mean, I originally was a Bechtel Power employee, but that was 30 years ago. And I've since worked for myself, but my goal in coming here, Vinny, to the Northwest was to try to get into clean air. I grew up in the smog in Southern California, and it was a goal since the time I was small to get out of that. So you can imagine my angst when I finally got to the wilderness of the Pacific Northwest, built a large off-grid home, and then discovered that some sort of experimentation was happening in the skies above me. And although I'd heard about this before, I had to experience it firsthand and begin to do my own research before the magnitude of what was going on became apparent. I mean, as these great patterns would be put on intermittent days above my home with a large off-grid system blocking sometimes 70, 80, even 90% of my solar uptake, I mean, a virtual blanket in the sky from horizon to horizon on given days. And I quickly came to the subject of geoengineering and found a mountain of data and was shocked that I had never heard of this before. This was 2001, 2002. And it didn't take a lot of research to come to the conclusion that this looked like what was happening. I didn't want to believe it, decided I would do some lab tests to hopefully confirm that nothing was falling. But I was very dismayed to find that, in fact, aluminum was coming down. An initial test of 7 parts per billion, Vinny, that was already high given our location. I talked to a hydrogeologist right out the gate and assured me that I shouldn't have levels anywhere near that high given where I lived. And I've said many times before, but this is so shocking, it needs to be restated, that subsequent rain tests over the next 5 years escalated as high as 3,450 parts per billion in a single rain event of aluminum, and that's astronomically high. So it's been a battle ever since. I mean, where do you run? Where do you hide? This is happening everywhere over the whole globe. We know that from lots of surveys, lots of studies. And have you ever seen the whale study that was done of any 1,000 whales from around the globe? Has that ever crossed your radar?
No, it hasn't.
There was in 2010, they studied 1,000 whales from around the globe, and at the last minute, the researchers decided to test for inorganics, and they came up with, this is a direct quote from the report, jaw-dropping levels of aluminum in these whales. So this is, again, from the most remote places on the planet. I think that's a pretty strong indicator. There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, and thus I made the decision that this battle had to be dealt with, and I've been at it ever since.
It occurs to me that this is a battle of human instinct. You have that option of flight. What is left when that is taken away from you?
Only to fight. You're exactly right. And when you're standing on the end of the plank and there's nowhere else to go, that's what you do. So my hope in the constant dissemination of information, and thankfully through the help of people like yourself, to try to, as clearly as possible, paint the picture with solid fact for people to understand that this is not something we can ignore. This is not a problem that's going to go away or sit and simmer. This is a noose that's being tightened around our necks by the day, no matter where we're at. It is stealing the future, any chance of a future, from our children. And even if it stopped tomorrow, much damage has already been done. We are all inhaling this stuff every breath we take. And when I say things like that, too, for a lot of people, I know you're obviously very up to speed at this, but so many people think that's some sort of a speculative statement that we're inhaling these materials. When we test the air, we've got 70-plus tests from my county alone at the state-certified lab. We know this stuff's coming down. There's no question about it. We know we're breathing it. We know what it does to our bodies over time. It accumulates, and so there's no speculation in this statement at all. And we see exactly what we'd expect to see from the constant exposure to these particulates. We see ALS, Alzheimer's, autism, ADD, and a long list of other ailments going off the charts, and really in many ways direct correlation to when we know these programs ramped up. For example, in the continental U.S. from 2005 to 2010, we see respiratory mortality going from 8th on the list of mortality to 3rd. Those are gargantuan leaps, and simply there's no other way to account for the absolutely off-the-charts escalation of everything respiratorily related.
And yet, despite the fact that there's no other possible way to account for it, people still live in, I would say, a perpetual bubble of denial with blinders on, earplugs, and I don't think they are even capable, to a large degree, of admitting that these programs are going on. It's bad science, at the end of the day, that would make one deny the reality of chemtrail geoengineering.
You mean that they infer that? I'm trying to get your exact angle on that. It's bad science that they would try to infer as the reason they're not accepting this?
More or less.
Yeah. Well, that's what they would try to infer. But in this case, when we have, this is how short the argument should be. We have film footage up close and personal of these planes spraying. That's the end of the argument. It doesn't go any farther than that. We have films of the crime occurring. So, you know, when I have anybody try to, quote, debate me on the issue of whether or not they're spraying, we have film footage of it, arguments over. And, you know, that anybody who tries to, and many people do, I certainly encounter, just like you do, Vincent, this sort of dogmatic denial. But quite simply, for most of those people, I think they're too fearful to really face this issue. The notion that you can't run, you can't hide, you can't escape it is too much for a lot of people, and they simply put some sort of defense mechanism up. But that tactic, if you will be short-lived, because the ramifications of what's happening around us right now are so cataclysmic and so immediate that people's heads are going to be yanked out of the sand very, very quickly, like it or not. They will face the repercussions from what they have ignored so far.
Well, it's like Ayn Rand said, is you can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality.
There you go. There you go. That's a good statement. And right now, I think we're in a transition period in many ways, Vincent. The power structure has clearly taken a different tack with its corporate-controlled media in recent months and even the last year plus to 2 years. It is clearly visible what they're attempting to get across. For example, in the Weather Channel, which is owned by a chain that leads to the Rothschilds, they are so theatrically trying to play up some of the weather events, especially these cooling events that we've had in the U.S. that are very short-lived. But I believe the power structure has indeed changed direction. And this is something people need to really contemplate and examine all the data that makes me make the statement. Clearly, for many years, they wanted everybody to know the planet was warming. They had an agenda for that, and they wanted to saddle society with a lot of burdens that really weren't the burden of society to shoulder. And to make red herrings out of many things. For example, in California, CARB, the California Air Resources Board, very powerful organization, is basically breaking the backs of the farmers here in California, forcing them to buy new equipment that meets the emission standards for particulates, while at the same time completely ignoring geoengineering, which is a source of particulate matter that's mathematically perhaps 100,000 times greater. But they've virtually turned two blind eyes to this source of particulates. And I've spoken in front of CARB. Again, this is probably one of the most powerful air monitoring organizations on the planet. And I spoke in front of them with a room full of farmers to make clear to these farmers that they were being made, the scapegoat for these larger overlying programs. And CARB admitted in this meeting that they virtually have no interest in what's happening with climate modification because it's not in their jurisdiction. Well, I don't think people are going to buy that much longer. I don't think that excuse is going to fly when, in California, for example, we're literally at this point, Vincent, the victim of weather warfare. They have cut off the moisture to California. Where I live in the last 7 years, my location is 250 inches of rain short for 7 years. They're literally tearing up orchards in one of the most fertile valleys on the planet, one of the food production centers of the United States. They're tearing up orchards because no moisture is falling, and we know why it's not falling, because we have satellite photos day in, day out of the blanket spraying of the Eastern Pacific, which shuts off our moisture. So this is, at this point, one can only view it as weather warfare against our own population here.
Now, is this in accordance with any other plans? Because I am aware of Agenda 21 and the UN Commission for Biodiversity and a number of other plans for which they want to get people off of the land and concentrate them into megacities, into slave blocks, that kind of thing. Do you see a similarity between the proposed plans of forced urbanization and the decline of rainfall in those particular areas?
That's a very valid question. I think at this point, you know, there's certain things we can know, other things we can't know with any certainty. But we can say that the cutting off of the hydrological cycle is a direct result of the aerosol programs and the ionosphere heaters, the HAARP facilities that are around the globe. The completely erratic behavior of the jet stream and the known effect of the aerosolization, we have enough data to really conclusively say that that's what's cutting off the hydrological cycle to California. As far as the connection with Agenda 21, given that we're talking about the same power structure and we see things being carried out that seem to correlate with the goals of that power structure, I think it's a pretty safe bet to say that it's absolutely connected. What I would add is this. I believe right now the power structure has unleashed things that can't be put back. Certainly Fukushima's one. We know that. But there are also climate feedback mechanisms that geoengineering has been very causal in releasing that can't be stopped now either. So no matter what plans they have, no matter what camps they planned on rounding people up and putting them into, and no matter how much they planned on just controlling the food supply and controlling the climate, that's an arrogance that defies comprehension, to think that they could control the climate and do anything other than screw it up, which is what they've done. But I would argue this, Vincent, that I think that the swamp will be so full of alligators soon for all of us, metaphorically, that the power structure as well will be facing so many challenges that I don't care what plans they have, I think they're going to have a hell of a time trying to carry them out, because the walls are closing in on everybody. The ship is sinking for them as well. And I think they're beginning to realize that. I think they're in a bit of a panic. They're trying to stock their bunkers and make preparations and try to lull the public into their normal media comatose. But things are happening on such a cataclysmic level and ramping up so quickly that I feel all their plans are likely not going to reach fruition.
Is that encouraging to you, or is it? I'm not 100% sure if that's actually really, really good news, Dane, because it means all of us are fracked.
Yeah, it for me it is good news in this sense that no matter how difficult the challenges are that we will all face, the current juggernaut of insanity that is grinding the planet to bits, the atmosphere with it, our life support systems with it, that has to stop. If that doesn't stop, there'll be nothing left. Nothing left to salvage. And all these sort of futuristic apocalyptic movies that we watch where collapse has already happened, but yet there's still an atmosphere, there's still animals, there's still life. That's only Hollywood. And on the road we're on, nothing will be left. I mean, we see results right now that should alarm the hell out of people, and it's astounding that it hasn't yet. For example, in Northern California, it's been a while since we've talked, so I'll fill you in on some other data that adds to our geoengineered climate nightmare. They have so shredded the ozone layer, and there is simply no other plausible causal factor to pin this on but geoengineering. When we know the level at which they are saturating the atmosphere with these particulates, we know the effect of those particulates on the ozone layer, there's simply no other major causal factor as geoengineering. The CFCs that the ozone destruction has been blamed on is a red herring. They're bad for the ozone, but very, very minute in scale compared to geoengineering. So we have an ozone hole now, not just over the southern hemisphere, but massive northern hemisphere hole. We've known this for a while, but we started metering this about 6 months ago. We bought, through an anonymous donor, we got good metering equipment, state-of-the-art stuff. We meter in California, Maine, Florida, New Mexico. And we're able to measure UVA and UVB and UVC. Now, right now we have UVB levels, Vincent, that are 1,200% higher than we're being told. And these are very lethal levels. The UV is so powerful here, it's burning the bark off of trees. And you can drive into the city in Northern California called Redding, where I live near this city, and this is a city known for its trees. The trees look hideous in the whole town. The branches are burnt on the ends. The bark is literally fried off the trunks on the south-southwest side. It's gone, completely gone down to core wood. And people seem still to be oblivious, and nothing grows here. I mean, the trees are not only not growing, they're dying everywhere. You can't grow a garden. No UV or no ozone layer and excessive UV radiation, that by itself can end life on the planet. And so you couple that with the weather patterns that are completely derailed now, the methane that's spewing from the Arctic, the ocean currents that have now changed directions largely to do with geoengineering and its altering of the wind currents, that changes ocean currents. We have a very, very dark horizon, and I know every radio show I feel like I'm showing up with my cloak and my sickle like the Grim Reaper, but I'm trying to wake people up to the fact that we have to accept whatever reality we face and prioritize. If the ship's going down and the ship is going down, what do we do? Do we deal with 100 little issues that won't matter, or do we deal with the one big one on which everything rests? And that's what I would argue. Geoengineering is that issue. And if we don't stop it, it's going to be game over soon enough. And even with Fukushima and the radiation, which is also obviously a game-ending event, potentially, if we're breathing these particulates day in, day out, and we're not thinking cognitively, and none of us are completely healthy at this point, none of us, but if that continues and we can't think clearly at all, how can we face Fukushima or any other disaster, for that matter?
Now, speaking of facing this and facing the facts, it occurs to me that these are inherently traumatic things. I've gotten over it, okay? I've spent my occasional night, curled into a ball crying and what have you, just going, please, God, let it not be true, and then accepting the fact that it is, unfortunately, and then having to deal with it. It's because in my past I've had systematic amounts of trauma, and as a result, I can deal with this. It's not easy, but I can deal with it. Perhaps this is the reason why many people are unable to deal with it and unable to face it and unable to admit the reality of it, is because they have not yet suffered enough in their own life in order to obtain the strength of will and character that it takes to do so.
I appreciate you sharing that with me. I really do. And it's meaningful to me, and I... makes me reflect a bit too, and I've had some rough treks in my life as well, and you know, perhaps that's added to a thicker skin. That being said, I'm trying to, in the course of delivering the data that I feel forced and compelled and responsible to deliver, I'm trying to point out to people that our philosophy, which is what you just shared with me, is imperative in this equation. It's imperative that we realize what's within our control and what's not, and that what truly matters is that we focus on playing our part in the play as best we can. That this has to come down to a decision to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, not because we're guaranteed a happy ending. And in some senses, a happy ending can exist in just having stayed at one's post and never given up. And that being said, we don't know exactly how the dominoes will fall. We're in uncharted waters, period. We don't know what other elements may be in this equation that might be in our favor that we just don't see yet. But that being said, if I have a choice of falling off the end of the plank and not even having tried to make a stand, or at least while I'm still standing to scream out, there's no choice. It's to try to stay in the fight. And I hope people are not overwhelmed by the data, that they reexamine their philosophy, that this sort of paradigm that our modern society has put us in, where everything is Disneyland and everything turns out happy and there's no challenge, and that's not reality. And the sooner we realize it, accept it, and not just accept it, but embrace it, I think it makes us much stronger if we embrace the challenge instead of trying to be adverse to it and running from it. Turn around, face it, embrace it. And in that, you know, we can have our best chance of the best potential outcome. And in the case of geoengineering, again, no matter how dark the horizon looks, I try to stress this to people, Vincent, that if we could simply bring this issue to light and to a halt, it would be so catalyzing for society that people from all walks, from all ideologies, would come together on this issue. And if we could stop this one issue, it would be a quantum leap in the right direction. No matter how dark things look, that by itself would be monumental in the right direction again. So I hope people focus on that. And, you know, when you're climbing a mountain, and I've climbed a lot of them, and if, just for the reason of continuing to try to test that sort of philosophy you just mentioned, you don't look at the top and try to figure out where you're going to take your steps on some precipice that's still 3,000 feet above you. You have to focus on what's in front of you. When you reach that higher point, then you'll deal with that then. But I hope people approach it in that manner.
That's right. It's I also have a saying, don't worry, it's just the end of the world. And when we have these kind of things right there in front of you, you know, I look up at the sky and you see a enormous what you call the dog's bollocks chemtrail, because they stand out, they're like they're the only one in the sky. You get those occasionally in New Zealand. What I worry about is not only the fact that it's being done, not only the fact that that plane has its transponder turned off so I can't even track it on the internet, not only am I worried about the fact that it's poisoning my air, not only am I worried about the fact that it's poisoning my water with aluminium and so on and so forth, because it gets into all the catchment and drinking water. Apparently, you only need one part per million to make drinking water undrinkable, according to the EPA, right? So what I'm worried about is not all of those things necessarily. It's that those other people cannot see that dog's bollocks chemtrail and believe it to be the same thing that I am, despite the overwhelming evidence. And this is about mind control. This is about brainwashing. This is about entertainment and distraction. These are all tools that have been used to distract people from this very important, maybe terrifying, truth. And so what I find interesting is that in using those very same tactics that were used to brainwash people, repeat to them over and over again, chemtrails aren't real, chemtrails aren't real, we can use those exact same tactics. We can use repetition. We can use valuable arguments. We can use the weight of evidence. We can use the power of truth to overcome all of it, if only we would believe in ourselves enough to do so.
I share all those feelings and insights that you just discovered. I mean, it certainly leaves one with a feeling of angst when people around you can't seem to see something that's so incredibly obvious right in front of their face. And it is very perplexing. And on the other hand, as you stated, through persistence, I've had many times people come to me 6 months after some sort of encounter with them and say, I thought you were crazy, but I looked into this and it's real. And so it took that seed a while to grow. And I know it's my nature. I like to put the whole oak tree down someone's throat. I want to give it all to them right now so they understand it in totality right now. And I know with this issue it just can't be done. And I've had to back myself off to leaving or planting a seed. And that's why we've distributed so many of our flyers. I think we put out about 60,000 now of the color glossy two-sided flyers. And those have helped a lot, because it's enough for people to open the door a bit. And once it's open, it's hard to shut. So they seem to then be more willing to take in information. And inevitably, when you walk away, they're reading that flyer. You don't have to go into a big tirade, point at the sky, and jump up and down. Just to pass it off and explain that it's extremely important. They should educate themselves for the issue, and that's helped a lot too. But it is astounding how well people have been trained to not let anything in that might threaten their perception of reality, Vince, and I share that angst.
I just had a profound realization while you were saying that. You're talking about planting seeds, and you know how seeds don't grow in aluminium contaminated soil.
Yeah, that's true. What do you do then? You know, that's the same. I mean, mentally, you know, that is a great point. It's a great analogy. So the soil's not growing. At the same time, if the neurons aren't firing, psychologically, people aren't going to be able to get this soon enough either. I mean, it is true. It's a bad mix where, as we're trying to reach them to point out the contamination itself is making them for more and more unreachable. It's affecting us all cognitively. There's no question about that. And then we have the synergistic toxicity, which I'm not sure we talked about before, but it's important for people to remember. These metals are all horrifically bad on their own. We know that. But you start to combine them, and they become exponentially worse. And we don't have studies on all the combinations, but we do have on some. We know we're all contaminated with mercury, no question about that. Now we know we all have aluminum in us, and we do have studies that indicate the combination of these two metals can increase overall toxicity by as much as 10,000%. It's an incredibly lethal brew. It's amazing our bodies can take what they have taken already. But everything has its breaking point, and we're seeing in the case of studies released in April of this year in the continental U.S., 1 in 3 U.S. citizens now dies with Alzheimer's. Seniors die with Alzheimer's and or autism or dementia. Alzheimer's or dementia, not dies from it, but they die with it, and that's a staggering statistic, 33%. So, and all of us are somewhere on our way to that. And none of us can have a truly healthy diagnosis at this point because we all have this stuff in us. So some are more resilient than others, but it's quite a vicious circle that we find ourselves in. And this is another thing that I'm trying to drive this point home, Vincent. I have a presentation this Friday in Northern California, and the title of that presentation is Climate Engineering, Weather Warfare, and the Collapse of Civilization. And on the collapse issue, many people are starting to realize weather warfare is going on, climate engineering is going on, but not very many, I believe, understand just how close societal collapse is. This is what I was alluding to at the beginning of our conversation. It seems far off to people, but this is a scenario that will seem far off until the brick hits them in the head. And I would argue that's a lot closer than people understand, because so many things are at the breaking point. That's why you have these conflicts springing up all over the world. All of it comes down to resources, and the global engineering has sped up that equation radically because it has decreased food production in so many places around the globe. I mean, California alone has been absolutely devastated. You can't grow a garden here. I mean, not where we're at. Unless you heavily augment your soil, you might have 1/10 of your normal production. We had a huge garden, about a 100-foot bed that was a jungle 7-8 years ago with no real effort at all. We couldn't keep 10 feet of that going this year. Nothing lived, nothing grew. If you could get something to grow, it wouldn't flower. The native plants don't grow. Trees are dying all over the forest. I mean, they're dying all over the forest, 300-400-year-old trees. And even trees with their feet in the water are dying near some of the streams. All the streams are largely drying up now, but which is indicative of the fact that it's not just drought-related. And we have USDA soil scientists, U.S. Department of Agriculture, have off the record admitted to me they know that it's not just the drought killing the trees, but the people, the scientists here, not just here, all over the world, and I know you know this too, Vincent, their complacency in this situation is absolutely appalling. The degree of silence, and yes, I know their lives are at risk, but if the ship is going down anyway, at what point do you find your courage and sing out?
Now,
I think that, go ahead.
I've got this this deep concern. It's almost like playing chicken. You know, who's gonna turn their car first? I think that we're the ones who won't be turning the wheel the other way, for we understand the consequence of losing this this battle. We're basically playing chicken with a 747.
We are, and this is something that can't be ignored. Again, I know people, like with 9/11 and other issues, they just feel if they ignore it, it'll all go away. This isn't going away. If we don't deal with this, we'll have nothing left to care about in very short order. And that's why, again, with geoengineering, I know I've had a lot of people say to me that, or indicate to me, they think this is just something I'm passionate about, so it's something I chose to do as if somehow I like it. That couldn't be further from the truth. This is the last job I ever wanted. It simply needed to be done. And it's not a simple matter of I like the Red Sox and somebody else likes the Dodgers. This is, you pick this issue because it is the house burning to the ground. It is the issue that you must deal with. And I don't understand, as you mentioned earlier, people's lack of willingness to take into consideration the full ramifications of geoengineering. But the point I was trying to make, when you have one issue that is literally tearing the atmosphere apart, disrupting all natural life support systems on the planet, poisoning everything from the clouds to the ground, you must deal with that. You simply have to deal with that. You can't hide, you can't run, and you have to turn and fight back. And that's where we're at. And again, in Northern California right now, our water situation is so radically critical that finally people who have really had their head buried in the sand are starting to pull it out. And you have media here trying to assure people that not to worry about the drought, that that's why we have dams. Well, the dams are empty. And this summer, when people turn their tap on, nothing's going to come out. And right now we have fires all over the globe. We've had catastrophic fires all over the U.S. for the last few years. And this year, I mean, the forest is literally one step away from being completely dead. And this is a very resilient forest where I live, and it can't go any longer. I mean, the UV is so intense, the trees have dropped much of their foliage. Even in the summer, they were dropping their leaves in August. And we haven't had appreciable rain in the location I live, which is boreal rainforest. That's 70-plus inches a year is considered rainforest. So in 2013, instead of 70-plus inches of rain, we had about 7, about one-tenth. And the air is much, much drier because these particulates are desiccants, so they absorb and accrete all available moisture. So not only is there no rain, the humidity is way lower. And actually, Vincent, we measured with the UV levels I was talking about. The reason we know the UVB is so high is because we think that the metering agencies here like NOAA have been falsifying the data for at least 30 years. Basically, the data they post for UV levels is completely fictitious. And the way we know that so in such a cut-and-dried fashion is because we are told by all major metering agencies that no more than 5% of total incoming UV is UVB. We know that now it's at least 60%. That's a 1,200% increase. We think the whole spectrum has gone up, and we're actually getting UVC now. UVC is the last bandwidth of radiation before you hit X-ray. We're told it stops 100,000 feet up in the atmosphere. It's hitting the surface of the planet now. And so on this forest here and getting people to wake up, between the UV, between the lack of moisture, between the aluminum that's now saturating our soils, we have virtually the entire ecosystem collapsing. So that should start to wake people up. And again, what I would argue in the overall picture, this is happening around the globe. We have marine die-off everywhere. We have forests burning to the ground. Production's not happening for food. I saw in parts of South America where Argentina cautioned their citizens not to eat so many tomatoes because the crop didn't happen. We're there. There's no hiding for this much longer. And to add more to the UV equation, UVB is a very lethal band of radiation for plankton. It penetrates much further into the ocean depths. It's absolutely decimating plankton. So we see the bottom of the food chain being killed. It's going to go up through the food chain. It already is. You have marine animals washing up on beaches all over North America and other places now as well. We're hearing there's nothing for them to eat. And the Fukushima radiation is a problem, certainly, but statistically, does not appear to be enough radiation to start killing things on the West Coast yet. And this appears to be the bottom of the food chain dropping out. You can link that right back to a loss of plankton, link that to the ozone depletion, link that to geoengineering. So many roads lead back to geoengineering, Vincent.
It does. And what occurs to me as you were saying that is, what is real environmentalism? Okay, caring for the environment, stewardship of the planet, that kind of thing. These are the things I define as real environmentalism. Whereas you take climate change activists, for instance, and I want to ask you a question. Have you ever told somebody, go out and research chemtrail geoengineering for yourself, right? You've told many people that, haven't you?
Of course.
Have you ever heard somebody saying, go out and research climate change for yourself and make up your own mind?
I probably have heard a few. But on the environmental end, they are the most lame part of this equation, really bar none. As you said, they're supposed to care about the environment, and they are the most obstinate, dogmatic, and willfully blind group in this entire equation. And I can't express my angst towards some of the biggest environmental groups, and some of which I've been in contact with, and some who have admitted they know this is going on, but it's not part of their current agenda. And again, there is that is the most glaring red flag of a total lack of true regard for what they claim to care about, a complete lack of regard. And from organizations like the Sierra Club, which you've probably heard of the Sierra Club, Vincent, I'm sure you have.
I have, yeah.
And these people who want to wrap themselves in this environmental cloak like they're these caring stewards of the planet will not look at this issue, which is exponentially more important than all other issues they're addressing combined. So the hypocrisy there is absolutely nauseating, and we make it a point, and I'm increasingly making a point on Geoengineering Watch, our website, and also with Disseminations, to shine the spotlight on the so-called environmental groups who are really helping to not only not addressing the issue of geoengineering, they're actually helping to hide it. And the way they help to hide it, groups like ETC, who put out a statement that really touted their participation in a, quote, ban on geoengineering experiments, which didn't mean anything. All it did was put people to sleep, their constituents to sleep, by making them think that they could relax now that there was a ban and nothing would happen. And that is so counterproductive. It was so patently false. So I have great angst for the quote-unquote environmental groups.
You haven't ever gone off at them before. I think it's only happened the once I've just lost my cool and launched into some sort of tirade at them, that kind of thing. Has this ever happened to you, or have you managed to, you know, keep your resolve?
Well, I guess I would be somewhere in the middle. I mean, I don't lose my composure per se, but I won't walk away. And with environmental groups and with some of the religious institutions here in California, you know, the people of faith here have a responsibility based on their own belief systems as well. And so with environmental groups like Sierra Club, I have had encounters with their head person in Northern California where I very adamantly held to the fact that if he truly was doing this for reasons of virtue, he has a responsibility to look at this issue, which he still has not done, this head individual in Northern California. With some of the religious congregations here in our area, I've had a few of the large pastors of large churches tell me that they wouldn't look at my data because they're just not interested. And I can't walk away like that, and I haven't walked away. And I pointed out to a number of these individuals at separate meetings, different occasions, that their own doctrine does not allow them to turn a blind eye to something of this magnitude, that they're required to be good stewards of the planet. And, you know, I've been able to shame them into taking the data, but in the case of the churches here, it comes down to the fact that they're more worried about their tax-exempt status than they are following the faith that they claim to adhere to. So, you know, that's also hypocrisy for me. And
they're what I call hypocristians.
Yes, hypocrites. Absolutely.
No. Not hypocrites. Hypocrites.
You broke up a little bit. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. Not hypocrites. Hypocristians.
Now I hear you. Yeah, the connection's a little bit bad, but yeah, that would fit.
And you said something there that you won't walk away, and neither do I. And that's the thing, that's the problem when you've got truth on your side, is that people walk away from you. You don't walk away from the debate because they can't handle it.
They do walk away. They do walk away. And I certainly have a completely different circle of acquaintances and friends and so forth, but I would take the circle I have now forever over those that have chosen to walk away. And I respect and regard those whom are willing to stand and make the truth known, regardless of ridicule, regardless of discomfort, that tenacity to not walk away. I hold you in high regard for that, and I hope that I never walk away from this as well.
Where the hell are we going to walk away to, Dane?
Well, we can't. That to me is The only failure in any battle is when you quit. If you don't quit, you can't lose. And the never give up attitude is something we all have to adopt, period. And now this dissemination, this presentation I'm doing this Friday again, will be another YouTube, another video to try to drive the point home to people that this is it. This is not a bump in the road again. This is the end of the road as we have known it, period. And based on all current trajectories, there are so many things coming together, so many converging catastrophes right now, that people who think they're going to stay in a bubble are going to be in for a very rude awakening very, very soon. And no matter how dark it is, though, I hope a reasonable percentage of those people will make the right decision to engage in efforts that still matter, even at this late date. So I would rather have a smaller number of engaged people that are engaged for the right reasons than a whole army of those that just want to make themselves feel better, Vincent. So I'll take the truly committed people as allies over the rest.
Well, it's not entirely dissimilar, the situation we have here, to the Alamo. And even though all the people at the Alamo are no longer with us, their story still stands the test of time and has inspired countless others throughout history to take similar stands and win. Now, one thing I said to your colleague Paul Mack, who does chemtrail activism in Australia, is imagine you're a German citizen, okay, and it's 1935 or something of that nature. Somebody comes and tells you that this wonderful guy who everybody loves, Adolf Hitler, is actually a complete psychopath and he's going to start a war. And during that war, he's going to cause the deaths of up to 40 million people and many millions of which he's going to orderly exterminate in death camps. What if people at that time had believed that information, looked at the evidence, started a movement that grew from one person to 100 to 1,000 to millions? What if World War II had been prevented? And I liken that to the current paradigm of chemtrail activism. Because what if we were able to prevent the worst of the worst from happening?
I mean, that's a good analogy, and I also try to point that out to people who think that they can't affect this equation, and that's simply not true. And I use the math equation. If you successfully conveyed this data to two people at the beginning of a 30-day month, and they to two each the second day of that 30-day month, and so on throughout the month, that's 5.5 million. And people think your math is completely wrong when you point that equation out to them, but it's not wrong. And that's how exponential things can be. So I think about this every day. Every day when I wake up and I remember that this is not a nightmare, this is the reality that we face, and I have to decide how I can make my day matter for the common good. And I keep this in mind, that, you know, what stone might I roll today that could start the avalanche going? And I think in these terms, so, and I'm sure you do too. So if we continue to do that, I think right now, the undercurrent of awareness for this issue is much greater than we realize. And I'm getting contacts now from people who are quite high in the food chain, especially in the entertainment industry, that seem to realize this is going on. But there, so many people, Vincent, are like monkeys with their hand in the jar. I saw when I was a kid a very profound documentary that showed how they catch monkeys. They tie a jar to a tree, they put a fruit in the jar, when the monkey puts his hand in and grabs it, he can't get his hand out. And they just walk right up and grab him, but he won't let go. He won't let go of that fruit. And how much are so many people in our society the same? You know, the ship's going down, but they won't stop dancing on the deck. And, you know, I think that this awareness is sinking in, and geoengineering being such a unique issue, unlike 9/11, unlike Kennedy assassination and 100 other visible conspiracies that were conspiracy fact, they can see it, every day in front of their face. They're realizing the weather is horribly off, and it's something that it just keeps chipping away at their mentality every day. And I think that we could be a lot closer to a break in the dam than we realize, and we need that break to happen very soon, because I can't stress enough how fast the climate is unraveling. It's absolutely imploding. And we do have, I know it's highly controversial with many people still, that, you know, what's happening with the climate in reality. And without going into all that, I want to state some simple facts that I hope people look up to verify. No matter what people think is happening with the climate, there are very powerful and very lethal feedback loops that are now occurring. Methane hydrate is releasing from the seafloor all over the Arctic, really all over the globe, but there's massive deposits in the Arctic. This methane is releasing so powerfully, it's actually breaking up some of the ice right now, this year, in the Laptev Sea. The methane, when people hear about methane, the scientific community still refers to methane as being 20 times more potent than CO2. And the whole CO2 thing, we're back to the environmentalists, all of whom are lame, all of whom blame everything on CO2, while they're ignoring the geoengineering elephant in the room. And I have great disdain for all those environmental people that do that. But the methane is another animal. And the methane is covering the planet like a layer of glass right now. That's why nighttime lows are rising twice as fast as daytime highs. And this is one of the reasons the geoengineers are going for broke, increased spraying everywhere, in an attempt to try to, what amounts to putting the fire out by throwing gas on it. Geoengineering has only fueled the climate unraveling, and yet the worse it gets, the more they spray. And this is the mentality of the military-industrial complex, right? If your head hurts from pounding it on the wall, you're not pounding it hard enough. You just need to pound harder. And that's what we're up against.
Now, when we break down words, we often find a lot of truth within these things. And I was just thinking, we can't call those people environmentalists anymore, because what they are is not an environmentalist. There's just no, there's nothing about them that connotes an environmentalist, more or less. So I was just thinking about the word environment and what's it made up of. There's ENV, there's MO, there's MEN. And I was just thinking, environment, or environmentalists, more or less, are simply envious morons that are mental.
You know, I can't argue that. I really can't. And I consider myself an environmentalist to the gills, but not in the sense that the rest are. And I've cut down more trees than most loggers in my forest, and I have a huge habitat preserve. But I cut down those trees because that's what the forest needed. I didn't log, but there was an overgrowth that had occurred from irresponsible logging in a species of trees that shouldn't have been there. But I know a lot of environmentalists that have this attitude that don't touch anything, don't touch a blade of grass. And that once you've altered the forest, then you need to, at times, take other means to set it right. Well, the same type of environmentalist that I mentioned a minute ago are the type that are the Bill McGibbons. I don't know if you know who Bill McGibbon is, and some of these people who appear to be, if you really trace back some of the finances, it seems to come from places that are quite suspect. And so you wonder how can a person like McGibbon or others, Greenpeace, World Wildlife Federation, how can they possibly not know that geoengineering is going on, especially when we send them data regularly? We drop data in their laps regularly. They do know. But they're simply in their little bubbles of comfort. They want to make themselves feel good, like they're doing something that matters. But they don't really want to face the real battle. They just simply want to sit the bench and feel good about themselves. And I have no respect. And you mentioned the kind of psychological issues with people like this. I know some. In fact, I know a clinical psychologist who considers himself a very courageous environmentalist. He will not face this issue. He won't. In fact, he's left me in the ditch a number of occasions, you know, when he should have stood by me with media contacts and so forth. He absolutely left me in the trench. So I don't have any respect for him. And, you know, being a psychologist, I think, is even more telling of the kind of mentality that goes on with some of these folks.
Well, Dane, you strike me as a man that has high standards, who does not accept incompetence or cowardice. Would I be correct in that assessment, and that you don't have patience for people of that nature?
I don't, and I don't know that I would consider that a virtue in myself. I try to work on that. I try to make myself remember that everybody's wired differently, and if I am, for reasons like you stated with yourself, Vincent, when you were younger, things you went through that maybe tempered you into what you are, and I went through certain experiences that perhaps thickened my skin.
You wouldn't mind sharing any of those experiences with us, would you?
Growing up, I had some very difficult family circumstances that made it tough at times for me to find enough to feed myself and to fend off older siblings that were incredibly violent with me, and things of this nature. So, those things certainly had an effect on me. But there are also those intangibles that we can't really explain why we feel the way we do. And a lot of people, I make it a point to talk to people who seem to care more than everybody else does. Whenever I meet people like that, people like you, I inquire as to if they've always been this way, if when they were children, if they didn't participate in the torturing of animals like other kids were doing. And it seems to be the case that so many people were wired a bit different from the time they were younger. And that's the thing we can't really explain, and why something hit us as being profound. One of my first memories was seeing, I was 4 years old, I saw a retarded boy, or bus boy, he dropped some dishes in a restaurant, and all the adults laughed. And I remember it clearly today, because it struck me as incredibly cruel. And what was most profound to me, even at 4 years old, was why it didn't strike the adults as being cruel to laugh at this guy. So there's some things that we can't explain, and I think it's important to try to keep that in mind with other people and not be immediately judgmental, but at the same time, when there's people who, like this one individual I just mentioned that's an environmentalist, psychologist, and so forth, people who have been shown the truth again and again and again and simply refuse to face it, people like this Sierra Club leader that I've met with again and again, people like that, I don't have any tolerance for them anymore. I don't. And at this point, they deserve to be shamed. And frankly, I think that's what's best for their character. Does that make sense? It's not a matter of just being vindictive on my part at all. I simply feel that shame is justified in their case when they will not make any effort to engage in a cause on which all depends. Their children, my children, and all the children of the world, when they will not engage because it's simply not comfortable for them, I think shame is a necessary element for the growth of their character. Does that make sense?
You reminded me just of a friend, John Astor. No, not John Astor. I've forgotten his name. That's terrible for me. Anyway, he once was being debated, rather berated rather than debated, I'd say, by a couple of talk radio show hosts here in New Zealand. And he questions a lot of elements of Māori history. And these two radio show hosts were Māori, and they were very successful and powerful and so on and so forth. And they were slandering him, defaming him, right, during the live broadcast. And he said something, and I'll never forget this, and I think this is actually quite important for everybody to remember for as long as they live. If you tell lies about me, I'm going to be forced to tell the truth about you.
Yes, that's how I feel. That's exactly, that's very well said. I'm going to remember that one. And at this point, that's what we have to do. That's the point we're at. We don't have tomorrow. We don't have any time to take the long way around the barn. Right now, it has to be told as it is. And those who are willing to rise to the challenge will. Those that won't deserve to bow their head in shame. That's where we're at.
Indeed. And we'll leave this first hour right there, ladies and gentlemen. We will be right back momentarily with the great Dane Wigington. Back in a moment.
I see you walking in the club, making moves, getting love, you know you're sexy. Walking through the disco noise, kissing girls, kissing boys, it's all the same.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two, and my very special guest is still the great Dane Wigington. He's a dog with a bone in the shape of a Boeing 747 with giant chemtrail tanks attached. Now, you have seen, I'm not sure if you actually have come to think of it, recently somebody published a number of pictures of chemtrail spraying apparatus that they attach to planes that are actually detachable. Have you seen this?
I don't know if I've seen those.
Okay. Well,
I think that's probably not the case for the majority of what we see, but at any given point, it's hard to tell what other experiments might be going on. And you know, there's so many pictures online. In fact, a lot of the pictures of the weather mod planes are just the smaller regional weather modification programs. Those are much smaller aircraft, much smaller apparatus, some of the silver iodide flares that go on the wings and the underbellies. And a lot of times here in the media, Vincent, they'll use those planes to more or less distract from the giant tankers that, you know, have fuselages filled with payload that they spew out over thousands and thousands of miles. So
it's chemical warfare.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, at this point, the whole planet is being immersed in weather wars that are literally, by the day, eliminating any chance for even short-term survival for not just our species, but for life on Earth. And that's how serious the situation is. And there's some people from academia starting to admit to this that are showing tremendous courage. Guy McPherson was one such academician from the University of Arizona. He's a professor emeritus. I hold him in very high regard, and he's speaking out as to the immediacy of our situation. And people tend to think of terms of thousands of years or hundreds of years perhaps before we would have any real environmental issues. There is very credible data right now from some of the frontline scientists. The AMIG group is one, the Arctic Methane Emergency Group, and I'm not in complete agreement with these scientists, obviously, because they're not admitting to the elephant in the room either, geoengineering. In fact, some of them are calling for geoengineering as if it hasn't been going on for 60 years already. From the person I know in that group, it's my understanding that most of the group knows it's going on, but they simply can't talk about it and still keep breathing, if you understand. Certain people in certain posts are much more endangered by speaking out than those of us that are outside the system. But you have frontline scientists right now saying on our current trajectory, life in the Northern Hemisphere may end in as little as two decades. And if you graph out what's currently happening, I believe those trajectories may be optimistic. So again, what's unraveling now is so fast. I mean, it's taken Northern California where literally in 1 year's time, the forest has gone silent. There's almost nothing out there living, walking, moving, birds, bears. I mean, I live in the middle of what was just absolutely thriving, untouched wilderness. It is absolutely completely different in the last couple of years, especially the last year. So it's the speed at which this is unraveling is blinding.
Now, it's quite a difficult one to handle as well. This is not something I'm going to say lightly, nor with intent to ever carry it out, nor to encourage anybody else to do it. These chemtrail planes, an article was recently released of pilots fearing that their chemtrail planes would be shot down by, or rather, have people pointing lasers at them and what have them and endanger their life. What if somebody had an anti-aircraft weapon of some kind and literally was shooting down these aircraft? You know, it would just be terrible because who would bear the brunt of the bad PR for such a callous act? It certainly wouldn't be the chemtrail geoengineering planes that are spraying everybody and killing the entire forest and indeed the entire world. It would be this one terrible and dare I say it, crazy person. And I mean that literally. You'd have to be crazy to actually want to do that and justify it. It would be all of us. Chemtrail activists, people have been talking about it for years, people who are exposing the truth, they'd bear the brunt. And so it occurs to me that if it was to ever happen, it would be the government who does it to themselves just so that they can blame us. You know, a false flag, if you will. And
yeah.
Somebody asked me once, why don't all of these bad people get assassinated? And I said to him, it's simple. Only a good person would want to see those bad people get assassinated. Except good people don't assassinate people.
They don't. And here's a big part of the equation that puts me in further agreement with you. Such a notion to take that tack, to try to meet the military-industrial complex head-on, would completely fail. It would bury all of us that are engaged in this movement. And two, it's the wrong approach because the vast majority of people involved with these programs are good people who simply have not yet woken up, who have been told that they're doing something benevolent for the common good. I spoke to a KC-135 pilot face-to-face who didn't know what he was doing up there. When he went back to ask questions, he soon found himself medicated behind a desk. So the vast majority of these people are not our enemy. Now, I don't want to insinuate that none of them are responsible for what they're doing, because that's not true. And those that knew what they were doing, if we can expose this and we find out people that knowingly engaged in this, knowing how lethal it was, such people should be tried in a court of law. They should be, because they are responsible. But so many of them, so many of our military brothers and sisters simply are being lied to, absolutely blatantly lied to, just like those that have had their limbs blown off in countries like Afghanistan and Iraq, and they think they're fighting for the common good and now are beginning to realize that they're simply cannon fodder for the power elite. And I think the dissension in the ranks is growing. And if you look at, if we carry this even a little further, Vincent, if you look at the lack of protest, the lack of dissension, even within the military and the universities, there has been incredibly elaborate measures taken by the power structure. Since the 60s, for example, in Vietnam, when the music carried a message of justice and peace that was very resonating amongst universities and so forth, you don't have any of that now. And I have read some pretty astounding and seemingly credible accounts of tremendous efforts by the power structure to hijack even the music industry so that the music no longer contains these inspirational messages that matter. And in fact, it doesn't. I mean, the music that we hear in the States it's absolutely mindless, meaningless, inspirationless garbage. And that message is no longer there. And you have all these social conditioning measures that have been put into place to sort of diffuse people's conscious thought. They don't think deeply anymore. They don't think like poets and warriors. They don't. And we need to wake that up in people. And I've been into our armed services branches, recruiting offices here in California, the Marines, the Navy, the Army, and the Air Force, and had very, very congenial and actually warm conversations with the military service members in there while passing on data about geoengineering, films, flyers, and explaining to them that although I salute their service, that the scientific community has convinced the military of our country to engage in programs that are absolutely lethal for us all. And I pleaded for them to investigate. And they were very cordial and very open and very receptive. And these people need to be our friends. We need to have them on our side. And if we could simply bring this to light and those military brothers and sisters realize that, that they were participating in the demise of their own children and their own comrades, I would bet my bottom dollar enough of them will refuse to participate that we'll have a whole new game. We'll have a whole new scenario. So that's the goal, not to meet anything head-on with something that, as you correctly stated, would cause the whole equation to blow up on our face, exactly what the power structure would want, but to take the opposite approach, to reach out to our military brothers and sisters with information and an open hand, because we need them.
Well, you're right, and also I've found that is often the case with many people whose job it is to risk their lives to a degree. Obviously, if you're stateside, there ain't a whole lot of risk being in military service. But of course, if you're being deployed overseas, you've seen the suffering, you've seen the reality. I think no American who hasn't, no American who's been there and done that approves of it unless they're psychopathic, right? And ergo, this is what's actually happening now in the United States. We have a record number of military personnel waking up. Why? Because they've all gone on rotation. They've all gone over there and they've seen what lies the government has wrought and how it costs the lives of not only their brothers and sisters beside them, but of those innocent children, women, old men, in a culture that they do not understand. That is a powerful wake-up call. And it's like a thread coming loose on a sweater. That's what it is. They've been tightly woven by the military-industrial complex to believe, to act, to kill without thinking. But the thread has come into view, and sometimes it only takes somebody like us to come along and pull at that thread.
I think that's a great analogy. And this unraveling that's occurring, and I am hearing from more people that are now back from their tours, and they're waking up to a lot of things, but they're definitely waking up to geoengineering. And this, again, this undercurrent of awareness, I think, is much broader than we realize. And it appears also on the bigger picture, based on a number of factors that I see, that there is infighting in the power structure now. And this is what we would expect when there's no longer enough to go around. It's just like mafia families fighting over turf when there's not enough to go around. And I think we're really at that point, and that's a step forward. Again, it sometimes has to get worse before it gets better, but a splintering of the power structure would definitely be a step forward. So that unraveling that you speak of, I think, might be coming from a number of places on that sweater. And we need to speed up the tugging of those strings because we don't have a lot of time. Again, there are points of no return that have already been passed in regards to the Earth life support systems. That doesn't mean a definite scenario of the planet supporting no life, but quite simply, our planet is not an anvil that you can beat on forever. It's a life-supporting, quite miraculous orb in a very hostile environment of space. And what's going on in our atmosphere right now, the only thing that keeps us alive is our atmosphere. And what's going on right now is absolutely the epitome of human insanity. And it has to be stopped quite quickly, or I believe there will be too much momentum in these feedback mechanisms to ever begin to stop. And even right now, we are facing a planet that's very different from the one we've known. And the climate aspect of this, Vincent, for the power structure, because I've had military service people say to me that they believe what's being done is certainly for the greater good. And this is the big lie. The power structure doesn't do anything for the greater good, as we all know. And right now, part of what they're doing, because all the military installations that are located along coastlines, we have coastal habitation around the globe that's really a majority percentage of civilization, and the ramifications from sea level rise, for example, is cataclysmic to modern civilization. So in every effort to keep the status quo, and they can accomplish a lot of things at once. They can, and I think this is what they're doing. You have weather warfare, so you have military strategic purposes. They're trying to control Earth's life support systems and play God with really the planet as a whole. And it's a way to try to slowly and more calmly reduce populations. Certainly, we know eugenics has been discussed enough, and we know statistically the planet can't support the population that's here. It's already happening. You're already seeing anarchy unravel in many places, as we mentioned earlier. So they're accomplishing a lot of things at once, but in their mind. But overall, the degree to which they're pulling the noose around their own neck is starting to show up amongst their own ranks, and I think that's in our favor. The more that we can expose this, and if we're being listened to right now, and I know a lot of my phone calls, I hear a lot of strange things happening, and I hope they're listening. I really do. I would think with all we know about NSA, they're certainly listening. And I think that's a good thing, because I think the sooner that these people realize that they are torpedoing their own ship, and we're all going to go down together, perhaps some of them will wake up.
Big Brother is watching and listening. Let's give him a good show. You mentioned before about how this is merely the epitome of insanity. I believe it's caused by a lack of humanity, and it can only be solved by an abundance and remembrance of what it means to belong to the human race. Remembrance of those who have either died or spent their lives fighting in service to human dignity and freedom. If you remember all of those who have given up all of that for you, it is a moral obligation to take up that mantle and continue their fight, lest they be forgotten.
Well, on that note, this is part of what makes me tick as well. And my lineage is Choctaw, Native American. It's distant, but I have a direct line to part of the Choctaw chiefs that signed the signature to the Trail of Tears. And anybody who's familiar with the Trail of Tears, it's one of the most heartbreaking stories of what was done to the American Indians. But those men who cherished the life support that the planet gave them, that they understood their relationship with the planet. No environment, no people. That's quite simple. So, and for all those that fought, from the Native Americans to all the present day activists who give all to try to preserve this for the common good, not for their own self-interest, but for the common good, who truly engage. And for even, I think of even our military brothers and sisters, Vincent, who, regardless of the conflict, were fighting for what they believed to be values. And I worked rehabbing NAM vets for a while as a volunteer. Broken men stepped on mines. And yes, the conflict was based on false premise and unnecessary, but it never lessened my respect and regard for these men who believed in what they were doing, if that's clear. So for all those who have given their lives, and all the bigger figures that we all know of, the Gandhis and the Martin Luther Kings, and yeah, there's a tremendous amount of people whom we can honor by trying to uphold certain principles. But the time right now, again, is short in that we face a different scenario than at any point in time in the past. And I think the likelihood of us losing our ability to communicate as you and I are right now becomes more certain by the day. And it could happen tomorrow, it could be a few months, but based on global equilibrium being lost, and it's being lost quickly as we see these conflicts unraveling everything around the globe, and And with the geoengineering, again, as things become too critical, we have Homeland Security here has ordered, I think, I'm sure you know this, Vincent, they've ordered something like 2.2 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point. You know that, right?
I heard even more, but
it perhaps was. It's gone.
It was an order that coincided with another order of, I think, millions of cardboard cutouts of children, pregnant women, and the elderly for target practice.
Well, this all sounds very implausible to certain people, but I would hope that they wake up, because in the case of the ammo orders, certainly there was no dispute. There was no dispute. This was an order by Homeland Security. So the point I'm getting at is...
It's not just ammunition that they ordered. It's hollow point ammunition, which is illegal to use under the Geneva Convention.
And it has only one purpose. Only one person. To inflict mortality on a human being. So... with this kind of an order, how people can't be completely up in arms right now, and this gets back to complacency we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, it's astounding to me. But people should consider that our situation is so precarious and so immediate that with this kind of preparation being made by Homeland Security, clearly they're anticipating very horrendous events to ensue. And with the geoengineering, as lethal as it is now, and as steadily and surely as it is contaminating us and making us all sicker, if they fly over with the right mix, it's game over right then. And they have pathogens. We know in 2000 there was 40-plus biolabs in the continental U.S. experimenting with pathogens. I think by 2010 there were 400. They're preparing for something. So, again, with the pathogens they have, and already it seems that there's experimentation going on, as the Carnicom Institute has verified, but if they fly over with the right mix, that's the end of the road right then. And people need to understand that apparatus is already set up in place. So the gravity of our situation can't be overstated, and the immediacy can't be overstated either. So these are points that need to be driven home with people. Whatever their plans were, whatever football games they planned on watching in the coming days and weeks, and if people want to have any shred of honor and any shred of participation in the whole, they're going to have to get up on the bench, off the bench, right now. Mm. We don't have to.
Well, I recall just the other day, and I was editing this video last night, I said three things motivate a good man: honor, integrity, and moral obligation.
Well, I mean, that's the bottom line. And for people along those lines, would be wise to remember the only thing that any of us own is our will. That's all. Everything else can be taken. And in fact, soon everything else likely will, one way or the other. Because this paradigm we've known is coming to a very rapid end. There's no getting around that for anybody who's really looking without filters. We've gone for a short time on resources that have been built up over a very long time, and whatever technology has been suppressed, and likely there's probably some very beneficial technologies that have been suppressed. But that being said, so much damage has been done because of the types of technology we have used that now there's simply no going back in many ways. So again, the sooner people embrace that, the sooner they place value on the virtues that you just outlined and decide why they're here, what matters, what doesn't, prioritize, what's the biggest leak in the ship, and you know, put things in proper order to keep the horse in front of the cart, so to speak. So we're there. And on the actual effect of these programs, Vincent, I'm curious, you live in a very lush place. I had the great pleasure of traveling to New Zealand twice. I'm still impressed with the giant ferns and the lushness of it. Has that changed?
Well, no, not really. Apart from the fact that there's very little life in the forests, because other than chemtrail geoengineering, we also dump $50 million worth of the world's most toxic poison, known as Compound 1080. We're the only country in the world that licenses it for outdoor use. It's illegal everywhere else in the entire planet. And they dump it via helicopter into the pristine native bush, and everything eats it. And it's a food chain disruptor as well. So if a bug eats it and then a bird eats the bug will die. And then if a possum eats the bird, that possum will die. And then if a larger predator eats the possum, that will die too. So that's kind of what's happening here environmentally. On top of that, the chemtrails. On top of that, the government opening up the national parks for mining. On top of that, the government now giving Anadarko and other large, massive, dangerous oil companies who were responsible in no small part for the Gulf of Mexico incident to do offshore drilling and prospecting. It may still be looking all right, maybe on the surface, but something draws near. Something grows within that I don't like the prospect of facing.
You know, it's astounding how the population, and certainly the Kiwis are, I think, as a population, they're quite fond of their lush islands, yes?
Some, those who actually live in them, and the vast majority of New Zealanders do not live on the land. They live in cities, and what they value is 24-hour supermarkets where they can buy beer in the middle of the night.
So things are changing, certainly. I mean, I was there, it's been about 20 years ago when I was there last, but the free diving there, which is what I was spending much of my time doing there, just the blue water diving, and the amount of marine life was absolutely incredible. It was incredible. I imagine that still to be one of the remaining places where it is, because here, I think you've probably heard about the marine die-off all over the West Coast. Now, I think I share with you off-air that on the beaches of Texas, I just got firsthand input about a very big die-off occurring there. I mean, littered all over the beach. Things are imploding at absolutely breakneck speed. Some of the areas, I'm not sure if you might have seen any of the data, Vincent, 100-plus miles off the California coast, some of the seafloor area there is completely littered with dead marine life. And the crashing of the oceans is yet one more very grim harbinger of the implosion of life on Earth. And species extinction rates, which I talk about a lot, but people need to try to get their arms around this, the species extinction rate today is conservatively 200 plant and animal species extinctions every single day. That's this figure I throw out a lot, and I think people think it's a rounded figure out of a hat. It's not. That's 10,000 times background extinction rates. There's nothing normal about that. And people, my own mother, I'm sorry to say, counters me with an argument I've heard from others. Species have always gone extinct, like somehow it's normal, but not at 10,000 times background. That's 1,000,000% of normal. But that's their mindset. Their mindset is what society has conditioned them with, that everything's always fine, everything will blow over, everything will be okay. Just go about your personal pursuit of pleasure. And that's what most people do. But this is about as natural as running somebody over in a crosswalk and saying, people die. It's natural. Nothing natural about when they died right then. Or you know, you'll... I don't know, you hear all sorts of arguments about defending, you know, things that are going on, it's always happened, this and that, and that's just a sort of conditioned denial that we've all, or so much of society has been successfully indoctrinated with.
Yeah, yeah. And what I find interesting is, in fact, I said this on the radio just yesterday, Dane, a lot of people predict the end of the world, but they don't actually have any evidence. It's just like a prediction, you know, like 2012, Y2K, Comet Eisen, et cetera, Nostradamus, or whatever his name was. And what's actually kind of occurred to me is that the end of the world's coming regardless, and it ain't going to be by somebody's exact predicted timeline by which it happens. It's already in full swing. It is ending as we speak. Ergo, anybody who predicts exact dates, exact events, exact things of such a nature doesn't know what they're talking about, and I will live in perpetual denial of their perception of reality. Not because I think everything's going to be fine and I'm just choosing to live in denial. It's just, I know that those predictions don't actually matter, right? Because I've got work to do, exposing scumbaggery and saving whatever we have left.
I'm going to remember that term. That's certainly very descriptive and very accurate, scumbaggery term. On the date thing, yes, that's always folly for anybody who tries to pick that. I mean, the only thing you can rationally do, if you look at our whole situation, and you compare it to maybe a car going 100 miles an hour and 10 feet from impact into a side of a cliff, you can't say exactly how it's going to turn out, but you can say it's going to be ugly, and no matter how hard you put the brakes on, it's too late. And at this point, civilization is not only not putting the brakes on, they're hitting the accelerator. So we're all sort of in the proverbial Thelma and Louise moment. You know, we're off the cliff, now it's free fall. And the more we get into that free fall, the more insane humanity behaves. It's like the fracking. I mean, how you hear a lot of people rant about the fracking like it's some sort of a wonderful thing, but I don't think it takes a lot of deduction to consider that if you bore a hole in the ground, pump 500 plus chemicals down under high pressure, you're going to contaminate things. And right now, I mean, that sort of mentality and the amount of countries that are willing to engage in practices like that, it shows the ever more desperate attempt for resources at any cost and the sort of blindness that goes with that. In the year 1900, it took about one barrel of hydrocarbon worth of energy to get 100 out of the ground. Now we're about one per five or six. So, in other words, it takes a full barrel of hydrocarbon energy in order to extract five or six barrels compared to 20 at the turn of the century. So, and a lot of that extraction or what's extracted is lower grade material. So there's an ever larger push of insanity to get at these resources. And you can just see the whole human condition starting to unravel with no real regard for the sustainability of anything, you know. And again, when you have the environmentalists we talked about earlier who claim to be in this for the long run, for the sustainability and so forth, and where are they in the equation, you know, sitting the bench really for the things that matter? So it's tough. There's only a few that are, I think, looking at things clearly and trying to address it in terms of prioritization. And we need more. And that's what I'm going to keep focusing on with disseminations, Vincent, is to try to get people to pick a priority. You know, not you don't go home and go about your life, and then every 2 weeks when you look up and it's a bad spray day, jump up and down, and then you know make a few calls that day, and then go about your business for the next 2 weeks. Because I get a lot of that. I get people who call me and go into some big tirade because the sky's a complete grid pattern, and the rain's been sprayed away again, but then they disappear for 2 weeks or a month. And that's not helpful. And I'm at the point now where I don't want to communicate with people like that anymore because it's not helpful, not to the cause, not to the work I'm trying to do. And you must get that, don't you?
I do to a degree. And what occurs to me is, as you're saying this with the fracking and the contamination and what have you, and the oil extraction, is that the elite already control all the oil resources and all of this kind of stuff, and they don't actually care. Ergo, I don't think fracking is about extraction, and I don't think the contamination is a side effect. I think that the contamination is actually the intention. Contaminate the land, reduce the population, force people into the elite-controlled smart growth cells in the cities. However, but at the same time, it's getting away on them. Let's not forget that Frankenstein's monster killed Frankenstein.
You may be you made me onto something with fracking, and I certainly can't say that I know one way or the other. It's the same with the geoengineering. I know a lot of people feel that the only reason they're geoengineering is to simply contaminate us all, and although I believe that that is one intent, the correlation with weather systems and weather and the events that are triggered are so glaringly for a specific purpose that it's really impossible for me to ignore that aspect. For example, the various instances where we've seen weather modification exercised on countries for military strategic purposes, like I mentioned earlier, Pakistan, Thailand, the cyclone Haiyan that just cut through the Philippines. We have Ahmadinejad's been on the floor of the UN twice to state, not that our media covered it, but to state that his country was being droughted out. So we see these very glaringly manipulated events in that sense with weather, and with the fracking, that certainly may be one primary element that they're connected to their objective. What makes me still consider the fact that human behavior is that insane to pursue things without the regard for consequences. Some of my favorite literature is Stoic philosophy. It's 2,000 years old. It's been an anchor for me my whole life. And this philosophy, in fact, the Discourses of Epictetus, he was a lame slave who was the mentor of the Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius. And this philosophy is so grounded, and it describes so well the mindset of people 2,000 years ago, and it was so similar. It's, you know, without fluoride in their water, just their human nature was so similar, their lack of regard for the consequences for their actions. And when we look at, and this could still be connected to your conclusions on fracking, Vincent, it doesn't contradict with that at all. When you consider psychoanalysis of psychopaths, and there is quite in-depth analysis, the common thread for various forms of psychosis is a complete lack of comprehension as to the consequences of their actions, even to themselves. So if your hypothesis is right, and it may be, that may be, you know, one of the, it keeps the sheeple busy, digging holes in the ground and polluting everything, and maybe that's accomplishing what the power structure wants. But in doing so, just like the feedback mechanisms that have been triggered, like methane hydrate release from the Arctic Ocean, can't be turned off now. Well, the last time this has happened in similar fashion, 55 million years ago, the Paleocene-Eocene, mass extinction globally, 70% terrestrial extinction, 94% aquatic, and the equilibrium period was about 15 to 20 million years. So no matter how deep their holes are in the ground that they're stocking up, and they appear to be stocking up for this coming, they're not going to stay underground that long. So again, I think they're shooting themselves in the foot no matter what their plan is.
Now, I think that if you were to look at society, you've heard the phrase, oh, we live in an insane world. Why is this any surprise that the people who are running the world are completely insane? In fact, shouldn't that be the first conclusion that you jump to? Oh, the world's freaking crazy. That's because it's run by crazy people, douchebag.
It is, but how do those crazy people get there? Because
they're really good at lying, putting, and manipulating people, because they've got the best psychologists and political scientists and spin doctors that money can buy. And they use the best part of our human character against us.
All true. All completely true. And even with that in mind, we also have the factor of the vast, vast, vast majority of society does not seem to feel a responsibility toward the common good when they see certain things manifesting themselves, certain evils, if you will. They don't seem to feel the sense of responsibility to try to set the train back on the tracks, to try to get the course heading fixed. And this is perplexing to me. I mean, I don't know very many people who feel any sense of responsibility toward the common good, if you will. As long as their own little situation is okay, they don't seem to care much about what their responsibility might be. So, you know, I certainly hope this changes, but those people in power, yes, are there because they do things that you or I would never do. So it should be no surprise that they end up in power. But the astounding part again is this percentage of society that will simply not feel a sense of responsibility to try to fix that situation. And
well, the difference with our continue.
Well, I would only say the difference with our situation now is that people will not have the luxury of looking the other way much longer, because they're going to be looking for the next bite of food. And our situation is that serious. And this will not happen slowly. This will not be some long, protracted, drawn-out situation. Once a link in the chain drops out, in this incredibly, incredibly complex balancing act that is modern civilization, once it breaks down, it will completely collapse at blinding speed. And this is something people should keep in the front of their mind.
Now, three things you've triggered in my mind there. The first thing is the phrase, from cradle to grave. This is what some believe that the government is there for. They're there to protect you as your loving nurturer, and they're there to bury you as your as something that will outlast you to a large degree. And the other is individual responsibility versus collectivism. Now, you've got a forest around you, and even you understand that forest doesn't actually exist. The only thing that actually really exists are the things you can touch, like the trees, like the soil. All of those things actually create the collective of themselves, but the collective itself is just a mental abstraction. It doesn't actually exist. So what people have done is they've they've mixed up this cradle to the grave mentality with collectivism. And as a direct result of lifetime indoctrination, you know how in Hollywood they have these lifetime achievement awards? Well, I think what most people have been rewarded with for their existence is a lifetime indoctrination award, right? They've never had an original thought, and any original thoughts that they did have were criticized and beaten out of them in one way or another, whether that be intellectually or in some cases physically. As a result, we have a humanity that is not humanity. We have people that are not people. Everything is upside down, as a famous quote said. What was it? Doctors destroy health. Lawyers destroy justice. The universities destroy knowledge. The major media destroys information. The government destroys freedom. And religions destroy spirituality. The only way that this can happen is through inversion. To tell somebody a lie that is the complete opposite of everything that they are planning to do. I believe this was one of the greatest discoveries that Germany stumbled upon, was if you tell a big enough lie and tell it often enough, people will begin to believe it. And the third point that you've triggered is the fact that people don't believe in themselves anymore as a result of getting that beaten out of them. And you can't understand the psychopathic mentality. Sorry, this was actually what I meant to say. The reason why people find this confusing, the reason why they find it very difficult to understand the mentality behind purposely doing that to the entire human race, is because you're not a psychopath. You don't think like they do. You don't rationalize like they do. And do you know what you'd have to do in order to completely and fully understand the mind of the insane? Is to become insane yourself. And sure enough, most of us have.
Those are very accurate insights, and I think that's one of the reasons that they can keep things hidden in such plain sight. 9/11, for example, and Building 7 coming down, you can't really rationally look at that and not recognize that that building was demoed. And the whole 9/11 scenario, I mean, the official story, there's nothing that really adds up in any way, shape, or form. I was 8 years old when I first saw the Kennedy assassination. That was 8 years after it happened. But my parents were there, and it occurred to me, how can your head fly back? backward if you got shot from behind. It just didn't add up. And I remember their attempt to quiet me down and convince me that the government had it all figured out, and certainly they would never do anything wrong. And, you know, that sort of mindset where, as you correctly stated, people can't understand how a psychopath thinks because they're not wired that way. And that's part of the reason why people can overlook the spraying they see with their own eyes, because they can't imagine why someone would do that, because they're not thinking in the terms of the psychopathic leaders that are doing it. And yet, even people who can't make that leap are also on some sort of an island where they're not really grounded to that freedom of thought that they should have had, because they can't seem to recognize or accept what they see either, even though it's right in front of them. So they're sort of caught in this backwater where they can't seem to connect the dots on much of anything. And there's too many people in that category right now, and yet there, and every provision has been made to keep those people busy with reality shows, with all sorts of distractions. And right now, we see that on a very extreme level. As the walls close in, there's ever more distractions and ever more effort, I believe, to keep the people distracted and busy till the last moment. And I think that moment might be much nearer than we believe. Again, whatever shoe is going to drop, Vincent, I think it's not far off. And right now, back to geoengineering and back to what we see happening, the NOAA maps, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that we see right now for the whole western U.S. is truly apocalyptic, the heating they show here. Now, I don't know whether they're trying to intentionally heat the West because it's so extreme what we see in the maps, if this indeed plays out. Are they trying to create thermal expansion? Are they trying to perhaps trigger seismic activity? I don't know, but I've never seen maps that look this frightening. I mean, in the sense that we're already burning up completely. It's already, literally, we have cities all over the state of California, some on the coast, that normally receive tremendous amounts of rain, have received less rain than Death Valley's normal annual rainfall. They've virtually cut us off. So I would argue that there are big wheels turning right now, plans being played out right now, and that people better keep their eye on the horizon, because I think the light we see is an oncoming train, as they say.
Now, you mentioned reality TV, trying to distract people there. Don't you find the very term reality TV to be a paradox?
It truly is. Yeah. It truly is.
And when you're talking about how it's almost like we're being prepared, like a farmer might prepare a pig for the slaughter and what have you. You feed them all the best, you treat them really well, until the day that you cut their throat and leave them out to bleed out. Now, that's one of the principles of Fabian socialism. What's their symbol again? They got two symbols that they identify themselves with. Number one, the most well known one is a wolf in sheep's clothing. Number two is a tortoise wielding a hammer. So you can understand that the implications there. Obviously, one pretends to be something else so it can eat you without you knowing that it's even there, and the other meaning it advances so slowly towards you, but then when it strikes with the killing blow. And that's something that I think people need to comprehend about the patience, the malice of these people, right? And what kind of strength of character and will and a desire to do good must be rising to oppose it. You know, as they say in physics, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. You are here because of these actions, Dane, so am I. They would never predict that people like us, in exactly the form and exactly the substance by which we would come out. They'd probably have general ideas about how to keep us under wraps and keep us afraid and keep us inactive. However, I don't think that the New World Order system can hold back a mass awakening. A mass awakening is precisely what is needed. And what's great about this system, and indeed many brilliant ideas, sow the seed of their own defeat via the implementation of themselves. They've created an entire human race that is so easily lied to that they'll believe anything. And now we're trying to tell them the truth, and they won't believe it unless we lie to them about it. Isn't that strange? I've always been perplexed by that. And the third thing that occurs to me is the dire situation we're in. People panic. People do sometimes terrible things, but sometimes really amazing things when the chips are down, don't they? And what's happening now? And I think it's summarized like this: water is life, and at the moment there are certain places in America that receive less water than a place called Death Valley.
It's very telling, and it's in fact everything you described. I would agree with, and I certainly ponder that sort of thoughts a lot in those that rise up, no matter how ominous and insurmountable the odds look, there are people who rise up. And I was very inspired by an Israeli Air Force pilot I just saw interviewed some time back, that in spite of tremendous pressure from his ranks, his peers, he refused to fly bombing runs over Gaza. You see people like this that do surface, and they're there. We need more to find that spark of inspiration and honor that causes them to stand up. But yes, these things, they are all interconnected, and it's hard to fathom with the collective insanity, which is a term I feel fits that which we fight. It's truly hard to imagine, because we can't think like them, the length of time they have planned what they have planned through generations and generations. And even we see, and I'm trying to find some old meteorological journals that actually, it's a global journal. It appears these journals are being snapped up. They're being taken out of circulation, because I feel there's photos that could help us understand more about what was atmospherically before these programs really came into play, which goes back a long way now, which goes back into the 40s, and it appears there was a great deal of effort made to lay the groundwork for these aerosol programs in a manner that would make them appear natural, as a natural occurrence of aviation some 70 years later. And we found even one of these meteorological journals from the 20s that had depictions of stratocirrus clouds that were aerosol clouds in the 20s. Now, certainly there were academicians that were hypothesizing about this sort of atmospheric modification even then. So were they planning, even before aviation had really, really begun to hit higher levels of technology, were they planning for this then? It seems they may have been. In fact, if you look at some of the whole secret society lineage, if you will, how much have they planned for, and for how long, and how many generations has this carried out over, while these organizations grow like a cancer, literally like a cancer that's devouring its host? And it's astounding to me. I can't think like that. I can't imagine being a part of such a society and a part of such a cancerous human movement. But yet, that's what we have. And now we are at that point. We're at that crossroads. We've passed the crossroads. The cancer appears to be very close to killing its host, the planet, and all life. And so, anyway, I don't know how it'll play out. I don't pretend to know. I know that we must keep marching in a direction that makes the most sense, is most rational right now. And there are certain things we could yet accomplish and then reassess our situations after. But for you, Vincent, is that tough for you to grapple with, to think about how many generations these secret societies have perpetuated themselves and maintain themselves, expand themselves while the population has slept.
It is unsurprising to me that such an agenda can be played out. And the lesson of history is that no generation that has ever existed is ever more than one or two generations away from freedom or enslavement. If you get freed one generation, one or two generations later, you will be enslaved. That is the lesson of history. It is a cycle over and over and over again. It repeats itself. Today, with technology, with the information age, perhaps the reason why revolutions and tyrannical takeovers alike happen is because people lacked the communications. They lacked the ability to communicate ideas in an open and free format that was readily accessible by all beings that were capable of accessing it. Of course, I think maybe we're on history-making turf here, where perhaps we can create a revolution within the world, not a violent revolution, not a half-assed dictator after the fact revolution, not soft, but strong. Strong in its belief that in order to preserve any freedom that we gain from such a revolution, we must be perpetually vigilant, as the founding fathers warned. And I think that maybe we have the technology to put those warnings into the minds of men and women and children of every subsequent generation, so that this kind of scumbaggery would not surface again. And if it did, it would be relatively minor and be quashed soon after. That is my great hope. And I get criticized very often, Dane, for not offering enough solutions, for just talking about the problems. I believe that you define what it is you want and you define the solutions you require by what it is you are not prepared to accept, by what it is you are willing to sacrifice in order to do so.
I would agree to that, and I aspire to those hopes as well, that human nature might develop to a point where such values might be more inherent. Certainly they're not there now, because we see the same behavior. And again, this is why this Stoic philosophy has been so important to me, and is such a shining, glaring example of the fact that human nature has changed really not at all in the last few thousand years. And now, again, with technology, as you stated, I mean, the consequences for this sort of behavior now is near total, because, in fact, on the trajectory we are on, we are much closer than almost any realized to a planet that will sustain no life at all. So with my children, I try to instill in them that if we have a chance to start again, if we could ever be a part of a rebirth of humanity or society, what would be the basic premise? And it's instilled in my children that if it's not good for the whole, it's not good for you, period. And this is a basic premise on which I think anything that could truly be sustained in any manner civilly would have to be built, and it's simply completely lacking. I mean, what do we have in our society right now, Vincent? It's just it's the sort of Wall Street greed is good, serve thyself mentality that has brought us to this place, and I think right now it's even more rampant than ever, in spite of the fact that we're off the cliff and in free fall. Where, you know, people think you're flying. I guess if you leap off a 100-story building, maybe it feels like you're flying until you hit the sidewalk. And right now we're passing the second story, and the sidewalk is the next stop. So we'll see who wakes up between now and impact time, but that could happen tomorrow. I mean, every domino is in place for a total collapse. Could happen tomorrow. Chances are it won't be long, because You can't hide certain things much longer. You can't hide the fact that the oceans are virtually imploding. Just checked today, tuna stocks globally are at least 97% depleted. Now, once you're down to the last few fish, the final implosion comes quite quickly. So you have a food source that has fed a huge percentage of the planet that's now basically gone. You have harvests, terrestrial harvests, that are plummeting. You have populations that are exploding. It's not hard to see where this is headed, and it's unraveling right now, as we spoke earlier. So people should try to get their arms around the immediacy of the situation and don't hide from it. You know, I mean, there's empowerment in facing something, no matter how overwhelming and ominous it is. There's empowerment in just simply making a decision to face it head on, period.
I think you're right. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Dane Wigington. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
If you want to destroy my sweater, hold this dread as I walk away.
This is my island in the sun, where my people have toiled since time begun. I may sail on many a sea, her shores will always be home to me. O island in the sun, built to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing in praise of your forest waters, your shining sand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is now hour number three, the final hour with the illustrious Dane Wigington. I guess we're kind of getting to the core of what it means to be human at this point. We've discussed the historical context, the scumbaggery elements within humanity, even psychopathy that besets us. And I think we have encapsulated and defined that chemtrail geoengineering is the issue. Not just a issue, the issue of our time, and if it is not stopped, everything else will, you know. And this is the importance of it, and perhaps this is also why it is so offensive to many to be ridiculed and insulted as a result of speaking out publicly against chemtrails. There was a politician in New Zealand, Dane, named Colin Craig, who had spoken about chemtrails, not in the I oppose chemtrails, I believe they're real, but more to the point, says he just doesn't know. Because he was not in flat out denial mode as a mainstream politician about chemtrail geoengineering, the mainstream media in New Zealand attacked him, demonized him, spent several minutes trying to force a denial out of him, basically. And it seems so disgusting to me that I cannot fathom it, much like a rational person cannot rationalize the irrational mind.
Yeah, I share that angst you feel about that, and I'm about to hit that with our Northern California media on Friday, whom I have absolutely drawn a line in the sand with, and I know they're going to be at this event, I'm not sure how much they'll try to spin my presentation, because there is a very rapidly growing tide of very strong support from every arena, and I think they're starting to consider that there will be huge economic backlash if they try to obscure the information on the battle on which everything depends, and more people are realizing that, farmers, ranchers, every spectrum up here is realizing the gravity of this issue. So that media battle is, we're in the throes of that here, but I think it's very close to turning the other direction against absolutely tyrannical, spineless, toe-the-line for the power structure sort of, I don't want to say use the words journalists because they certainly don't deserve that term, but people who are truly the bottom of the barrel. And we're close to turning the tide here, truly. And it'll be interesting to see how this Friday plays out, because I know they'll be there at this event, as will members from every sect of the community. And I'll keep you posted on how that goes, because they've certainly spun the issue in the past. I've kept all those articles. In fact, they make every effort, for example, to never, ever use the word geoengineering, never use the term climate engineering, to only use the word chemtrails. And again, although I'm not phobic of that term, in certain contexts or certain situations, the science terms must be stressed. And so I've saved all their previous publications trying to roast me, and that will be part of my presentation to lay the groundwork so the people in that audience understand what we're up against and set their sights squarely on the media in our area, and to hold them accountable and responsible. Because really, that type of complacency, just like I mentioned earlier with the pilots, when you have media whose responsibility it is to get at the truth for the public good, doing anything but, and if you had pilots or any participants in these programs who actually knew what they were doing, there's accountability for that. Those sorts of people should be tried as accomplices. And so we'll see what happens. But I think we're closer to, there's so much underlying awareness, Vincent. If we could just keep our stride and not break pace at all, but to keep our kick until the dam breaks, because I think it's closer than we believe. The dam of awareness here is closer than we believe. And I've shared on a number of shows before, but I've met with a lot of academicians, some from major universities. I've met with NOAA scientists who told me, and I quote this directly, they told me, we know about these programs and we're alarmed as hell. We don't know what to do about it because we have no First Amendment protection. Those people are out there, lots of them. If we could just break the dam, it would absolutely implode from every corner.
Mm. Now,
the dam of silence, if you will.
Well, it's actually encouraging to see them attacking geoengineering activists and commentators like yourself. Let me define what I mean by that. Of course, I'm not saying it's great that they take the smack out of you. The more desperate they get, the more likely it is that we're actually close to a breakthrough. All right. So I hope that they ramp it up. I hope that they even start huge campaigns. All the better. All the better. It just gives us ammunition. Okay. It's kind of like throwing a grenade at us without removing the pin. Then we just pull out the pin and throw it back in their face. That's precisely what happens when they come to us with lies and scumbaggery, as we destroy them with the truth. And Dane, maybe a piece of wisdom that Professor Paul Connett of the Fluoride Action Network delivered in Auckland March last year, I believe. He said that if fluoride is ever removed from a water supply, all the councillors of those city councils that made said decision will be attacked, demonized, accusations will come flying from all directions. And then a number of months after he left New Zealand, Hamilton City Council, I think it's one of the largest cities in New Zealand, removed fluoride. And all of a sudden, all these articles start coming out, all of these mainstream media start coming out and demonizing them and attacking them, exactly as he said. So perhaps, maybe, Dane, you could preface your presentation by saying that is likely to happen, and in so doing, disarm it.
It is a part of my presentation. Yeah, I'm on the same page as you there. You know, I have copies in the presentation of the previous articles from this main North State publication exactly for that purpose. We're on the same page.
All right. I can teach you nothing.
Oh, yes, you can. You can. In this particular case, though, you know, you've probably decided early on in your life, more so than I have. It took me that people simply do not operate off the same set of moral standards that that were ingrained in me, and it took me a long time to get that through my head. I've been thrown under the bus a lot because I couldn't comprehend how people could behave in the way they did, but I'm a little more aware of it now. And anyway, but the input's well taken, and in this case, we do have that base covered.
Mm, indeed. It's just kind of like you prepare for the hurricanes, you know. You prepare for the worst, you hope for the best. But in this case, you know that the worst is coming, so you're going to be well prepared.
Well, we are. And, you know, if we go back to disseminations I did here years back, and actual editorials, which are part of what I'm putting in this PowerPoint that were published in this paper, that spoke of the methane release going back 7-8 years, things like that, that they should have covered from any perspective, they should have covered it. And I have published editorials that I wrote making clear that this methane situation was much more dire than people understood. Well, now we know. Now we know. Anybody who wonders how dire the methane situation is should Google Arctic News. That's all. Just Google Arctic News. First site that comes up. You'll have more reading than you'll want to have, and you'll understand the direness of the situation. And same with the term chemtrails, where no matter what I said, no matter how many science terms I used, SAG, stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, SRM, solar radiation management, only science terms, they published exactly none of those terms and only used the terms chemtrail conspiracy again and again and again. So it's at the point now where the ridicule doesn't bother me at all. I mean, the opinions of fools mean nothing to me. It's simply the truth is the truth, and now the tides are turning here. And in fact, we've laid a lot of groundwork here in Northern California, because in 2008, I was able to get in front of the county supervisors here that we had a contamination issue, period. That's the tack I took. I was not trying to get them to acknowledge anything on the aerosol spraying programs, but simply the cut and dried, inarguable equation that we had a contamination issue in Northern California, period, end of story. There was a mountain of heavy metal falling on us, so much that it was changing soil pHs, contaminating waterways, and that was absolutely inarguable. And they have an absolute responsibility, at minimum, to disclose this to the public, which they did not do. So there is liability created here in this particular location, because this is all on the record. And some of these missteps or complete evasion of responsibility by county officials is now nearing a point where there may be accountability, and we're trying to move that direction, because there are certain directions one can take, again, like with a contamination issue, that simply can't be argued. It's not like passing a provision that says please don't spray us, because they don't have the power to do that, but they do have certain mandates that they're required to fulfill, and one is to disclose to their citizens that there's a contamination issue, period. And they have not done that, and we have it on the record. So we're trying to move a direction to put a blip on the radar here, and I think we're getting closer. And in the meantime, there is a lot of wheels turning, Vincent. I mean, there's I think with congressional people, and I do know that for a fact because I work with some and in steady contact with some, that there's wheels turning behind the scenes that I can't go into big details, but let's hope that they don't get completely stonewalled, because there is effort coming from within the system now as well. People who are personally concerned, not doing it because their constituents want them to, but because they're realizing that they, their families, their children will all go down with this ship. And that's starting to sink in.
Mm. I've seen that happen a lot here, but I don't know. Maybe I'm getting cynical in my old age of 29. Is that, despite the fact that county and local bodies have a liability, they seem to weasel out of it because they have the ability to lie. You know?
They do, and they have. And again, it's not like here. The benefit of that here, the benefit of anything we could accomplish here, is simply to help put the issue on the radar on a much larger scale, that this contamination can be verified, and we had certain studies here that helped us to verify that it's not from some other source. The, again, CARB, California Air Regional Board, Air Resources Board, has studied the aerosols from China. Heavy metals are not amongst those aerosols, so we know it's of local origin. There's no other plausible source but these aerosol operations. And, you know, our attempt right now is to get something on the radar, because those that are trying with longer-term goals of legislation and higher arenas, this is national security. The geoengineering programs are considered national security. You have, on the record, U.S. military leaders stating that climate change is the greatest national security threat of all. So clearly that's where geoengineering fits in for them, and nothing is going to force them to stop it except raising awareness to the point of visibility that can't be hidden. And thus, what we talked about earlier, families of military people know this is going on. And I have contact with a congressional candidate from back east whose brother, he absolutely believes, is a part of these programs. And it has caused literally internal civil war in their family, that he is publicly now speaking out against his own brother to shine the light on what his brother's participating in. And that's the level we need to bring this to, where it is so widely known that everybody begins to question anybody who in their family who could possibly be a part of these programs. And we can undermine this whole operation from the inside out. And that's simply what we must do. We must do. There's no other way to get at this animal. It has to be done from the inside out.
Well, see, I'm not in entire agreement with you there. I think it must be done in every single conceivable way possible. I liken it to the tactic of the cactus, covers itself in spines from every direction. So no matter where you attack it from above, from below, from the sides or whatever, you get a little prick to remind you.
But what if you infect that? What if you infect that cactus like a fungus from the inside, where it has no spines, and it rots from the inside out, and it completely falls over? I mean,
But how would you get the infection in there in the first place if it was covered in spines to prevent you from getting anywhere near it?
Well, if you have people on the inside already, and that's beyond the reach of the spines. I mean, I think. What we're getting at here, maybe it's a difference in terminology we're using, but I think we're thinking along the same lines. I mean, we certainly have left no stone unturned in trying to raise the alarm on this, but all the efforts of raising the alarm, again, is directed toward starting so many spot fires that they cannot be put out. In fact, that's one of our main efforts right now with some very dedicated and articulate activists that have stepped up to help. Something I've wanted to implement for a very long time, and now we are able to. I've done it on my own as much as time would permit, but now I have help. We locate people who would care if they knew, contacts, and even contacts that some of which may already know. For example, Weather Central is one weather organization that's not completely hijacked, and they have 70, 80 meteorologists, some of whom are pretty conscientious individuals. We mail tailored packages of information with an intro letter that's very polished to give them heads up that this is going on, that people are waking up to the fact that it's going on. We want to know why they're not talking about it. And it gives them data and puts them on the spot at the same time, puts them in the light. And it goes to all of them at once, so all of them know that the others know. And in starting these spot fires, and we've heard back from some of these people now, finally, we're getting letters back, and even from journalists like Dar Jamal. I don't know if you know who Dar Jamal is. He's a mainstream journalist that responded back immediately, that he's looking at this issue now, and finally, I think, getting to the point where he may talk about it. I know a New York Times reporter that has been editorially shut down again and again, that I think now is realizing the gravity of the situation. He may be getting close to speaking out. I think, Vincent, it can't be underestimated if the critical mass of awareness was reached with the population and people realized that their grandmother's Alzheimer's, their child's autism was likely connected to these programs. I don't think we have seen society so completely motivated to fight back, as we would see if that was truly raised to a level of awareness. I think that's the point in time where society, in spite of all the dumbing down that's happened, they wake up, grab their pitchforks and torches, and look for who's responsible.
You're correct. However, I hope that it doesn't come to that. I wish... Basically my philosophy is the system would be perfect if everything they told us about it was true. courts delivering justice, governments protecting rights, police arresting and the guilty, those kind of things. Environmental Protection Agency protecting the environment. Nothing that our society currently accepts to be true has any truth to it whatsoever. We need to create an opposite, more or less, by just making all of that BS true. Maybe it never was true, but I believe that the system can work if we force it to.
But how long would it work? In this sense, what we have built is a house of cards that can only fall, and that is modern society. It is completely, has always been completely unsustainable, and we're about to find out just how unsustainable it was.
Agreed.
And so as society collapses, as civilization collapses, and it must collapse, there's rationally no other outcome short of some unforeseen element in this equation, that this is where we're headed. At this point, in spite of people's dumbing down, in spite of their being put in situations where they can feel they're isolated, comfortable, and don't have to worry about all this, this situation now is affecting so many people so horrifically, from farmers who can't grow because of no water to farmers who can't grow because they're buried in water. Florida, Friday, I don't know if you heard this, Florida got, we got nothing. Another storm went over California that they completely sprayed away. We got 5/100ths of an inch. You know how, it barely enough to wet the ground, right? At the same time, Florida got 2 feet of rain in one day, 24 inches of rain in one day. And this is what we have. So not only do we have the health effects, we have everything that people are trying to hang on to and deal with. It's all being so radically affected that once they know, once the critical mass knows, not only are they being poisoned, but that the weather's being completely manipulated, at that point, no matter what the weather is, if it's something other than what they think it should be, there's going to be angry people, lots of them, whether it's an ice storm, which is ice nucleated. We've seen so many. Did you see the big ice boulders in Lake Michigan? Did you see that?
No, but I remember you told me a while ago about it snowing when the temperature was like, it's not possible. It couldn't freeze, that's not that right temperature. And then I heard it, I think it might have been only a day or two after, that there was a golf competition in Arizona, which is as hot as it gets, pretty much, and it was snowing in the middle of that golfing tournament so much that they had to turn it off.
there you go. And now this is on the ice nucleation. I've been screaming about that for years, and it's finally starting to sink in. I mean, they are ice nucleating almost everything. This is how they help cool things off. It's an endothermic reaction. We know there's barium involved. We think barium hydroxide. Ammonium, probably, but ammonium is difficult to test for because once it's down, it tends to gas out. We're seeing ice, Vincent, on, for example, our ponds in Northern California. I have 16 ponds on my preserve. There was ice on the top of those ponds for 3 weeks with pond water at 40 degrees, air temperatures at night in the 40s, and daytime highs in the 60s. Ice remained for 3 weeks. It's such a powerful nucleator, it's virtually gassing the water out of the ponds because it continues to have a chemical reaction, if that makes sense. So in the case of barium hydroxide and ammonium, if you mix those elements together in a lab beaker, you can drop the temp about 100 degrees instantly. So we know they're nucleating the clouds. We know the barium's in the mix. We've tested and tested and tested again. And you can feel if you're outside, and I do this when a storm is coming over, not that we get any rain, but it's almost like someone opened the door of a refrigerator and you feel this air descending down on you, and all you can hear is aircraft, one after another after another. And they're nucleating everything. We can see it on the radar because you can see bands of subtropical moisture just flash out to snow for no reason. And the Weather Channel, of course, as they are paid to do, try to explain this away, how this 45, 50-degree temperature stuff can come down. I just talked to George Barnes. You know the Skyder Alert film? You've seen the Skyder Alert film, Vincent?
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's called Look Up. Have you heard of the Skyder Alert website?
No.
We need to get that one out there. It's an interactive website that you can download, and you can locate wherever they're spraying, and it automatically sends out mails to, at least in the U.S., representatives. And there's, I'm going to send you a press link for this film that includes the full length of the film. It's an award-winning film narrated by William Baldwin called Look Up. It's already won about a half a dozen awards. And the filmmaker, George Barnes, was in Florida at 72 degrees with snowflakes coming down. So people need to understand none of these weather events are natural, none. So back to the ice balls in Lake Michigan. How does that happen? And how do the weather people try to explain it away when it hasn't happened historically? It's happened for the last couple of years occasionally. It's happened two or three times before, but never historically. So you have, they radically ice nucleate all the precipitation coming down in that region. And that's how you get these massive temperature drops, because the ice nucleation doesn't just make it snow at above normal temps. If it's 20 degrees, it might drop the temps another 20 down to zero. It has that profound of an effect. So as you have this chemical nucleation hitting the lake, it tends to keep nucleating, and thus you form this sphere as it's rolling through the water, because that nucleation process continues to try to ball up on itself. And thus you get, you should Google this. The pictures would astound you, like 75
pounds. It's literally, so it's literally a chemical snowball effect.
That's right. And if you Google it, you'll be absolutely astounded at what you see. These massive ice balls littering the lake. Also, it forms this nucleated snow where as the wind blows, you see in several locations, there's just been a mass of this strange-looking mix that gets pushed up onto people's properties. You know, it's very astounding. So they are... Right now, this is what's happening, in my opinion. They've so decimated the system, and there's other causes too. Again, I know a lot of people don't want to believe that humans have damaged the planet. That's simply not reality. We've damaged the planet from so many directions, it's hard to quantify. That being said, geoengineering, mathematically, would be the single greatest disrupting factor. Not the only factor by any means, again, the single greatest disrupting. So as they've ripped the climate apart, now they've triggered these feedback mechanisms, the ozone layer is imploding, the methane is absolutely spewing from the Arctic. So what's their response? As we discussed earlier, just do more, just spray more. And they're absolutely so desperate right now that they're playing every card they have, they're nucleating everything they can possibly nucleate, and thus you see temperature swings literally in a day, 50, 60-degree swings, not from high to low for the day, but from one day's high to the next day's high. We saw Amarillo, Texas, May 1st, 2013, was 100 degrees for the day, broke the all-time record, snowed the next day. Can't have that kind of swing without a whole lot of geoengineering and a whole lot of jet stream manipulation. And they're manipulating the jet stream so radically right now, it is historically unprecedented. And yet, the meteorologists at Weather Channel, Weather Underground, all purchased by Rothschilds, try to explain this away. But quite simply, we're at the point now that it's becoming so cataclysmic that I think we're near breaking points on so many fronts that I don't think they can hide it much longer. And I don't know if you saw I know in New Zealand you guys are cooler, but in Australia, they're in meltdown. Tasmania's in meltdown. There's Brazil right now. Same thing. There's fires all over where there shouldn't be. And the more they spray, and this is what gets back to Northern California and part of what's waking people up here. I've beat this drum for 7-8 years. The more they spray, the less it will rain. That's a scientific, indisputable fact. That's what we have. Now we have no rain. Now it's starting to sink in. People are waking up. So although it's getting warmer, if the Earth was allowed to respond, Vincent, if it was not for these aerosols, it would be raining much more. The forests would be thriving and not dying. Yes, sea levels might be rising, but so many of the other symptoms we have would be, we don't know how much better it would be, likely exponentially better had they never begun these programs. We might find ourselves in a completely different reality, but as it sits right now, it's grim and getting grimmer by the day.
Yeah, this is true, and maybe some PR stunts in order to call attention to the issue would be well served. You know, I was thinking about eating a hell of a lot of prunes and just waltzing into the New Zealand Parliament to remind them of the horror that can be unleashed by even a minor methane release.
Well, that's true. And, you know, maybe that would be a reminder for them. And what we have now on the last observation we had from, and this is on red herrings too, by the way, on the methane. We've seen all sorts of to-do about livestock methane and so forth. All that is just absolute red herring. And so, again, we have blame trying to be laid in certain places where it doesn't belong, and blame with the roads that lead back to geoengineering, a huge aspect of the methane release in the Arctic, because they've so radically altered the upper level wind currents with geoengineering, now we have ocean currents doing what they should not do, what they historically have not done. We have currents delivering warm water from the Atlantic straight into the Arctic. That shouldn't happen, but it is. And now it's helping to thaw the methane. So once you hamper the system, you hamper the whole system. So the last report we had from the Arctic, and they seem to be scrubbing data now, a Russian research vessel was observing plumes of methane from the seafloor a kilometer wide and seeing thousands of those plumes. So, again, geoengineering is pounding the nails into our collective coffins day in, day out. Has to be dealt with. And aside from the fact that it's affecting us all physically, cognitively, poisoning our ability to grow any food, there's just no... there's no angle at which geoengineering isn't rapidly and totally diminishing our chance for even short-term survival.
I mean, you know, it is at that point where you need that those screaming people that are going, "Oh my God, we're all screwed and I'm gonna die." You know, that kind of mentality, I think, in some cases is actually called for, because it shocks people out of their cushy little reality that is gradually being taken away from them piece by piece as the information rolls in that everything you have ever lived your entire life to achieve no longer exists. Get over it. The situation is dire. A situation so bad that we can never retire.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly the point I'm at. I mean, and you know, I've tried, as you know, and you you've rightly accused me of, you know, I've always delivered a pretty dire message, but because that's simply what the data dictates. But it's gone to apocalyptic now, because that's simply where we're at. And there's no more time to even pull a punch at all with this. It's we have to sift the herd here, if you will. Who's going to help and who's not? Because we are indeed at the great turning point of what was compared to what will be. And I believe that this is where we find out what people are made of.
It is. And I'm looking now beside me at a stack, literally, I think, I've got about 8 very well-printed chemtrail banners that were donated to me that are stuck with duct tape that was donated to me on the backs of real estate signs that were donated to me, and I'm speaking to you on a Skype account that was paid for with donations, on a microphone that was donated, the computer itself was donated, and I'm thinking to myself, all of this has been given to me, and so hence the obligation is upon me to use all of these tools and gifts and things that I now possess because of other people, right? It is now my obligation to go out there and ensure that they get used to their full effect. I remember, I think it was about a month or so ago, Dane, that, somewhat more than a month, maybe 2 or 3 actually, where I was called to come and attend a chemtrail protest. And I was really exhausted. I was tired. I couldn't even fathom it. And I said to them, "Look, I really can't." And then I looked over at this pile of chemtrail banners that I've professionally made, and knowing that I'm the only one in the country that has that stack, I had to go out there. I just strapped up my boots, got myself fueled up on coffee, and just went out there and did it. Not because somebody was forcing me to, but because I'm the only one with the power to. And I think we all need to recognize that power within ourselves. We all need to recognize our inherent responsibility that is granted to us by that power. We need to appreciate those around us who have given up things so that we might live.
I respect you for that, my friend. I truly do. And that's why I felt compelled to drop what I was doing for the chance to converse with you today. It's time very well spent, and I'm very grateful that you made the time also. And I spend about 10 hours a day on this now, literally, and it's all I do. It's all I've done for about 10 years, and some have helped. And one particular anonymous person who has helped us try to keep our head above the waterline so we can keep this work up. Astoundingly, I've had calls from bankers from Manhattan and from Texas who were completely livid about the spraying. But when it came down to actually contributing anything to the cause, nothing, absolutely nothing, because they just don't want to let go of the paradigm that they've had. But they won't have a choice much longer. And that sense of responsibility that you felt that made you pull your boots on and go out there and do it, that's what I feel now. I can't look at my kids and not do this. I can't look at any child and not do this. It's not just about my children. It's about all children. And I think about what people have been through, Vincent. I think about certain things, that stories that I made myself read and remember. One story about a deaf, dumb, and blind African child who was dumped at a train station in Africa. Deaf, dumb, and blind. Can't see, can't speak, can't hear, doesn't know where he's at, doesn't know where his next bite of food's coming from, where he's going to sleep, where he's going to go to the bathroom. And I make myself remember that child somehow surviving under those conditions. And I think if that child can do that, then I can do this from dawn till dusk every single day. And so those sorts of stories, you know, there's others like them that I make myself remember. But this is where all of us find out what we're made of. I hope that people that you communicate with, that I communicate with, stand back and abandon everything they've been conditioned with and evaluate what it means to be a human being, what it means to be a part of the whole, and what it means to make your moment, your part in this play, matter. And I hope that we have a tidal wave of such people rise up, and no matter how dark the horizon is, again, we could take a quantum leap in the right direction, and who knows where the road might lead from there.
This is true. And as you're saying that, I'm reminded of migrating ducks and geese. And you ever had them fly over you? You know how they're always going at it like, wah, 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 wah. They never shut up, you know, when they're flying.
Are you seeing any this year? Do you see any this year?
I only saw one, I think, last week. But what the point is that the reason why they fly in a formation is because that formation lessens the resistance of the air. As it punches through, it makes it easier for every other duck. Now, the only duck in that formation that is actually getting the full brunt of the wind, the one that is actually more or less has to be stronger than all the others, is the one at the front. And the reason why all the other ducks keep quacking and quacking and quacking as they fly is to encourage the lead duck to not give up so that they can all keep moving in formation together. This is activism. I mean, people like you and I, we are the ducks at the lead of that. And we need other people to quack in support so that we may keep leading.
We need them to fly with us as well. And this is where, you know, many people are now. I do see more and hear from more people who are not just willing to voice their opinion now and then, but are asking me, what can I do? What can I do? And they truly want to contribute, and we're trying to help them contribute in whatever way they can. But at the same time, we're trying to teach them how to shoot from behind rocks and trees, so to speak, as the colonists did here when there was not the apparatus to be completely organized. And by shooting from behind rocks and trees, their ability to get credible information, we're trying to make that information available to them, like with our flyer that seems to have done a tremendous amount of good. I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's quite effective, and we have it on our site. They can download it for free. We're trying to express to people how you go about waking up others. You know, without, you don't go into a big emotional rant with no information to pass on. It doesn't work. Don't try. And we're trying to give them enough direction so that whether they're a part of some common effort we're doing or whether they're in a skirmish on the front on their own, they'll have the means to advance. To make progress, and you know, we're trying in every angle we can, and you know, we certainly need other people to join this effort that have skills. We need people that have computer skills that can help us do certain things on a larger scale. But those people are starting to come up, and I've just started participating in Facebook as well, and I put that off for a long time, and I'm glad I engaged now because a lot of people are there that I didn't have access to before, and it's helping. But other people, again, like George Barnes, who I will send you this link for SkyderAlert.com. You can Google that, and you'll see, I think there's a trailer on that link, and I'll send you the full press link, Vincent. But George, very high in the food chain and the entertainment industry. He's a filmmaker, and realizing the gravity of this issue, and that's why he put together the film Look Up. I think it's a very good intro tool. Encourage people to get a copy of that film of George's and give a presentation on it. And we have a big presentation in L.A. That's another, I think he's won another award there, on February 7th at LAX Hilton. There's a film festival presentation there that I'll be attending. And it's getting higher and higher in the ladder, much faster now. But again, the walls are closing in much faster at the same time. So we're all in a race, but if we keep our stride right now, if we keep our pace up, we must, this battle must be won. So we have to keep our stride, period.
It is not a choice. It is a lack of options. And what I'd like to do is spend a few minutes, and 'cause everybody says, oh, you can contribute and so on and so forth, but it's rarely specified as exactly how you can contribute. So here's a few things. For the audience members who perhaps want to help expose the scumbaggery of chemtrail engineering but are unable to do so or to think about it. First lesson, you don't need anybody's help to start protesting and doing something about chemtrail geoengineering. You need nobody's help, okay? Not to start. To continue, frack yes. I will admit that. Had I not been given the support that I have been, I would have done virtually nothing by comparison to what I have done. Secondly, that's if you have absolutely no compulsion. You haven't started doing anything yet. There are many, many things you can do. So first of all, you've got to be informed, or at least a little bit informed, enough to have at least a little bit of a conversation about it. In your daily life, you will encounter people all the time, and you can speak to them about chemtrail geoengineering whenever there is one above you. It is the perfect opportunity to point up in the sky and just waver some random strangers over and just go, hey, look at that. What is that? You know, it's a chemtrail. Have you guys ever heard of this? You know, that kind of thing. Conversations, very, very good, because as a former telemarketer, I understood that the person-to-person conversation contact was the most powerful form of getting people interested into it. Anybody can watch a documentary, and the documentaries are absolutely good, and that's another way that you can help people into. You can give out DVDs. You can print flyers. Many, many, many websites currently on the on the World Wide Web have templates for all of these sorts of things. So if you have minor resources, such as a few dollars for printing costs and what have you, you can carry around a wee stack of these and just hand them out to people in your street. You can make a sign out of cardboard and a felt tip pen and just stand on the corner yelling about it. Just don't do nothing. Don't do nothing. Hijack the mainstream media. Did you know, or at least this is the case in New Zealand, that if you call up a mainstream talk radio station and you mention the name of a politician, that politician will be sent a transcript about it. You can call up, mention a name of a, I don't know, I suppose in New Zealand the environment minister would be Nick Smith, who was famously exposed in, I think it was What in the World Are They Spraying, saying that, oh, these contrails are just jet engines, okay? And you can mention his name, talk about chemtrails. Even if that mainstream media talk show host hangs up on you in minutes, he'll still get a transcript. What if not just you, but another person? Maybe even get two or three mates or something like that with your cell phones and call them up while you're sitting in a room egging each other on to do it, okay? There is a will and there is a way, and you can contribute. Now, that's just doing things personally without including really anybody else in the process. It's about waking people up, about enforcing that will to expose chemtrail geoengineering on all of those people around you. Once you've advanced from that, once you realize that you have personal power, that you don't actually need somebody's help, then you can start advancing into the areas where you can work with people. And you will realize that you're so much stronger together because you didn't need them in the first place. And that so everything that you do with other people becomes an improvement on everything that you could do by yourself. And it encourages you to do even more and more and more. It's an exponential scale of scumbaggery exposing potential. All right. Dana, have I missed anything?
I don't think you have. And again, if people initially, as you said, they can do something right now. And one of those steps is just to simply learn enough. Nobody has to try to spend 10 or 12 years on it like some of us, but learn enough to have a grasp of just how dire the situation is and just how critical this one particular battle is, so that you understand that spending the time to do everything you just described is meaningful, it matters. And for every single person you help wake up, every single person whose field of vision you help expand and understand the situation is taking one more step in the right direction for life on Earth, for humanity. And it's imperative that we all engage in this effort. And this is the issue. This is the issue of our time that must be dealt with. Again, even connected to nuclear catastrophe, which we're facing now as well, we cannot possibly think our way out of that situation unless we're firing on all neurons, and we're not going to be firing on all neurons for much longer if we continue to be exposed to geoengineering. So it's not only tearing the planet's life support systems apart, it's daily further inhibiting our ability to function and think clearly. So this is the battle. This is the battle. This is why some of us have focused all on this battle, because it rationally is the most important battle. So again, would not have a voice without people like you, Vincent. I'm very, very grateful that you're out there, and we'll continue to try to interact in any way we can. But everything you described are steps people should take, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And of course, if you don't have the time or, let's say, the social grace to go out and be at the forefront and things of that nature. I mean, a lot of people just don't have the personality. Me, I'm a very, very arrogant, self-centered person to a degree, and so naturally I'll become a radio show host, except I use my negative attributes to get in the mind of my enemy and to do the direct opposite of everything that my instincts tell me to do, because I know that my instincts are wrong. Do you know what I'm saying? You kind of, I think there's a saying in the Marines is, we trim the fat off of our soul and as a, I forget the rest of the quote. It was quite brilliant. But anyway, I think it's like you got to challenge yourself, and you'll find out. Sure enough, so long as you actually do step out that freaking door, so long as you do open your mouth, so long as you do print that flyer, pick up that telephone in service to humanity, you will find that you are capable of things that you never even dreamed possible, that your strength will grow, it will not wane, and your compulsion to help even more people will be emboldened by the power that you find within yourself as a result of even just trying in the first place. As Yoda said, try not, do or do not. There is no try.
I like that. And that's certainly, in this equation, is that's the method in which we must think. And also people should remember this, that 10 years ago, this was a much more difficult battle because, I had nobody listening to me. I was literally screaming at the moon. But now, events are so advanced, the disruption of the weather patterns, the knowledge of this, it's now becoming easier by the day. And for those that are fearful of any ridicule or any lack of acceptance or rejection, the seeds they plant will very soon find fertile ground. As things continue to unravel, as this issue becomes impossible to keep hidden, the lump won't fit under the rug, people should take strength in that whatever ridicule they get, whatever rejection they get, will be short-lived as those around them are forced to wake up. They will not have a choice for much longer. The walls are closing in by the day. So the time of action, the time for action is now. We don't have tomorrow, but those people that are out there that don't know about this issue, and there's still plenty that have never even heard of it, we have to reach them. We have to reach them soon so we can start as many spot fires as possible, and that all merge together in a giant blaze that can't be put out, so that we bring this to the light of day. We're closer to that than most realize.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I was talking with Paul Mack last week about this, Dane, and he was telling me about when they're doing their chemtrail geoengineering protest, that there's so many people who will come up to you and encourage you and go, yeah, man, I know that this is going on. I just didn't know about the protest and what have you and whatnot. Now, some people at the protest were like, oh, well, you should be more onto it. You should be better informed. You should be out of this protest with us, you know. And they're like, well, I've got other things to do. But I don't think those people who are criticizing those who came up and gave you encouragement realized that without those people who were unaware of the protest, without those people who just turned up out of the blue to give you a little bit of encouragement, a little bit of spurring on, they're actually one of the most essential parts of that protest. Imagine if they weren't there. Imagine if the only interaction you got from the public was people giving you crap about it.
Yeah, that's the way it was. That's the way it was when I started this slog. But it's certainly turning rapidly now. I mean, most people have heard about this issue. And again, we could wake up tomorrow, Vincent, and find out that the dam has broken. I mean, there's enough movement out there, enough wheels turning, that it's anybody's guess when the curtain is pulled back.
Ironically, the worse it gets, the easier it gets.
Yes, that's my point. But one thing to remember also, is as that happens, and as this is exposed, it will change the dynamics radically. And then we have the wounded tiger syndrome for the power structures. They're back further and further into a corner, and more people realize what's happening and who's behind it. God knows what card they'll play then. But that's just simply something we have to face. So the sooner we make this first step of getting this issue out in the open, the closer we'll be to stopping it. So that's goal number one.
Mm. And then what's goal number two? Again, I mean, and we've got to wrap up here in just a minute or two or three. What is the solution? As people always tell me, you know, you never talk about the solutions. And I think that once public awareness has been achieved, then solutions can actually be implemented. But of course, There must be reparation. Is there any kind of schemes or plans or things in your head that, with public awareness and with the right funding and programs and what have you, could we indeed not only have stopped geoengineering but also begin to repair the planet?
Industrial society will not continue much longer, one way or the other. And there's no getting around that. So if we could, again, as a first order of business, expose geoengineering, it would completely, in and of itself, change the dynamics of our paradigm. After collapse, or as we move into collapse of what was industrial civilization, the only form of engineering that could have any impact in a sustainable, correct direction would be to completely halt the current mechanism of destruction that is industrial civilization and begin to try to regress toward what was. And that would involve, for example, planting trees on an absolutely massive scale. I mean, that is nature's mechanism of recovering equilibrium. If the rain, the hydrological cycle would radically increase, Vincent, if it were not for geoengineering. And to give you an idea how radically, right now it's likely that overall global precipitation is probably down 50%. 50%. And we have examples of this in 92 when Mount Pinatubo blew, not so significant one-time eruption. It decreased precipitation globally to an astounding level. 92 was by 50% the lowest rainfall year ever recorded to that date. So the atmosphere holds 7% more moisture for every degree of Fahrenheit warming. And it is globally, overall, much warmer. It should be raining horrifically. And if you took away the impacts of geoengineering, there would be much more convection, much more rain. Carbon-laden rain would stimulate the forest. The planet could start to gain equilibrium again. So the whole paradigm has to change. It has to change. There is no other option. There is no other chance. So if we could bring this to light, bring it to a halt, and the gravity of our situation was realized by a critical mass of society, this is the point where we might then begin to implement a complete paradigm change, a complete different manner of life and living. It is the only possible chance we have. People need to accept that. They can accept it well or accept it poorly. But accept it, they will, one way or the other. It's going to happen. The collapse is going to happen. So the sooner we come to grips with that, the sooner we start to prepare for that, the sooner we start to implement what we can utilize to start heading the right direction instead of the wrong one we've been on, the more chance we have. So, you know, it's one step at a time. We can't leap to the top of the mountain. But, again, our initial steps right now, priority one, is to expose geoengineering, which will lead to stopping geoengineering, which will lead to the evaluation of our other options.
I think so. It's kind of like if you want to get on the road to better health, remove the cancer, you know, and then you've got some more work to do after that. But just remove the cancer first. You know, it's pretty straightforward.
Good analogy.
Yeah. Incidentally, did you know that cancer could conceivably survive forever so long as it didn't kill the host?
In this case, it is killing those. Yeah. It is, very rapidly. So the cancer must be removed. And I'm with you on that one. And again, this is something that takes all of us. It's going to take all of us in this effort. And that point, we need to drive home as well. There's no room for anybody to sit the bench on this.
Yeah, exactly. Let's. What was the phrase? Nut up or shut up?
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
The Great Dane Wigington, who might be responsible for a large quantity of wigging out amidst the audience on this particular broadcast. It is my honor and my pleasure and various other nice adjectives to have had you for a full 3 hours. Have you done a 3-hour interview before?
I haven't with you. I've done 3 hours with George Norrie on Coast to Coast. But I'm typically 2 or 1 hour shows. But you know what? Nobody else I'd rather do 3 hours with on a show, Vincent. It's an honor from my standpoint as well. Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. Okay, and I would like you to round us off. We've only got about a minute or so left to plug some websites, both of yourself and your colleagues, and then I have a short clip, a John F. Kennedy quote to play us, where he actually does talk about modifying the sky and the rain. So if you would proceed to give yourself and your colleagues a little bit of a plug.
We try at geoengineeringwatch.org, we try to post the most current assessments of what's going on. No ads, just science, and we hope that's a good resource for people to look to. Also, skyteralert.com. Seems a lot of people have not heard of this site yet. An interactive website that facilitates direct action people can take. The Look Up documentary. Encourage people to get a copy of that DVD for filmmaker George Barnes. There's a lot of good interviews there. It's narrated by William Baldwin, so that celebrity notoriety helps gain credibility with people. Do viewings, invite people over, introduce them to the subject, have credible data to pass on to them. Again, as Vincent correctly stated earlier, there's a lot of things people can do right now from whatever position they're in, and we need to all start doing it immediately. So that would be the end of my rant, Vincent, and again, thank you for all your tireless efforts, my friend. It's an honor to know you. I appreciate it.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. John F. Kennedy. Listen to this, Dane.
The pioneers gave up their safety, their comfort, and sometimes their lives to build our new West. They were determined to make the new world strong and free, an example to the world. Some would say that those struggles are all over, that all the horizons have been explored, that all the battles have been won, that there is no longer an American frontier. And we stand today on the edge of a new frontier, the frontier of unknown opportunities and peril. Beyond that frontier are uncharted areas of science and space, unsolved problems of peace and war, unconquered province of ignorance and prejudice. I'm asking each of you to be pioneers towards that new frontier. My call is to the young in heart, regardless of age. Can we carry through in an age where we will witness not only new breakthroughs in weapons of destruction, but also a race for mastery of the sky and the rain, the ocean and the tides, the far side of space, and the inside of men's minds. All mankind waits upon our decision. A whole world looks to see what we shall do. And we cannot fail that trust, and we cannot fail to try.
Real powerful stuff, eh?
It is. It is. That's the last leader who tried to, in the presidency, who actually had the fiber to try to stand up. We see how long he lasted, but now it's up to all of us to stand up together in unison.
Let's march towards that frontier, people. You've been listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, my very special guest, Dane Wigington, geoengineeringwatch.org, and we'll see you again sometime.
You are the only exception for you.